listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to audiochat.fakeologist.com. This is a new and exciting way to communicate with fellow fakeologists around the globe. Each day we compress and post the day's audio into a file that can be big or small. Discover new voices and ideas that talk about media fakery like you never did before. To listen to the live stream, go to s3.fakeologist.com. Now, on with the audio chat.
Hi, Sammy.
Hello, Sammy.
We in the live stream now. Talking about anniversaries that are close to this date and time. Hold on, Sammy. Hold on. Hi, Sammy.
Hi.
There you go. There, we are now rolling.
Okay. All right.
We're going to talk about anniversaries, right?
Yeah. Today is the Oklahoma City bombing anniversary and the Boston bombing anniversary.
They were on the same day?
I think yesterday was Oklahoma City. I'm trying today to find that little snippet. Where is that?
Here in Washington, all Jeff. The marijuana stores had sales. So.
Oh, they had. You should have seen it here in Colorado. It was crazy. 420 the day that Hitler was born?
Is that true?
Right?
I don't know if that's true.
Yeah. It is true. It's either that or it was the day that he died. And then I think it was like, let's see. April 20th, 1889 was the day that he was born. And then he died on April 30th. And
I don't know, ever.
Oklahoma.
Wow.
Oklahoma City was the 19th of April, 1995. Waco was the 19th of April, 1993. Columbine was April 20th, 1999. And then the Boston.
You're going too fast. I gotta write these. I gotta write this down. I'm never gonna remember it. I'm getting a piece of paper. Because we're going to talk about of these. Hold up.
I'll copy. Do you want me to just copy and paste it to you? Just a little thing that
yes.
I had written down in my notes.
Oh, perfect.
April 19th through May 1st is Illuminati blood sacrifice to the beast. Fire sacrifice is required on April 19th. I guess, should I post this in the TeamSpeak chat?
We could, but I think if we do it in the regular Fakeologist chat, then it's there forever. I think Ab would prefer.
Well, how about we do this? How about we just use Skype, and then you can post it in the notes, or I can post all of them in the notes.
That's perfect. Then we'll get it all nice as one piece.
Yeah, that way if we make mistakes, we can just edit them and then post it all on the page.
Perfect.
So we can start with this entry that I just sent you.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm glad I'm not Illuminati, because I don't have to do the blood sacrifice to the beast.
No, although
I wasn't prepared for that.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, so there's 19th of April, 93, Waco. 19th of April, 1995. Oklahoma, 20th of April, 1999, Columbine, 19th of April, 2013, was the Boston bombing. So happy anniversary!
Happy anniversary! Woo! Yay! All these, we need some firecrackers to celebrate.
Yeah. Ooh. So, I guess I don't have that one. So, where did it go?
From Waco to Oklahoma, it was 2 years. From Oklahoma to Columbine, it was 4 years. and Columbine to the marathon. 14 years. I wonder if there's any in between there. Any smaller ones?
Yeah, there's probably some. There's probably some smaller ones. And then, oh, get this. This is something that I just found out about today. A friend of mine was sending me this Oklahoma City bombing videos. There's this one documentary, and I'll send you the link. Haven't really gotten to it yet. A lot of the footage is really old, so it's not easy on the eyes. There you go. So you can watch that on your own time. But one of the
Oklahoma
things
City
that I found out from
cover
this,
up. Okay. Go ahead.
One of the things that I found out about this from him, because he did a lot of research into this, was that the governors. This is a friend of mine on Facebook.
Okay.
The governors. I want to make sure that I get this right. The governor of Oklahoma's brother had just written this novel about a terrorist bombing in Oklahoma City. Like, prior to that happening, you know? And in the novel, the bomber's name was Thomas McVeigh.
Oh. No.
And this, I never realized that there was that little piece of the story.
So, and what was, for the listeners, what was the name of the actual suspect in the Oklahoma City bombing?
Was Timothy McVeigh.
Same last name?
Yeah, same first letter of his first name. But, you know,
McVeigh.
Like, it's kind of similar to that. It was like that novel that was written by, like, I think it was a Tom Clancy novel, like, before, a few years before 9/11. And in the novel, they crashed airplanes into the World Trade Center. And so it's just kind of that same card that they're playing in terms of, you know, the way that they're tipping off whatever in these operations.
Mm-hmm. Is that Vidir?
It is Vidir.
Hi, Vidir.
Hello.
We're looking at anniversaries today.
Yeah, right now we're talking about Oklahoma City bombing.
And Thomas McVeigh was in the novel.
Thomas McVeigh was the fictional character in the novel that the governor of Oklahoma's brother wrote that talked about this terrorist attack in Oklahoma City. So it's the same thing that they did on 9/11 as far as there's a novel that comes out beforehand that talks about it. And it's like, it's part of the template.
Wow. It's so obvious. I mean, they're not clearly not worried that anyone's going to find out.
Yeah, it's not something that I ever really even looked into too much. So then anyways, yeah, so then today, so then getting back to the Boston bombing. Today we had one of the bombing victims finish the race, allegedly. Bombing survivor Rebecca Gregory crosses marathon finish line. But before we get to that, let's do the chronological thing where we go back. And I'll send you the links in this order. Rebecca Gregory.
And she didn't have her leg amputated immediately, correct?
Correct. She didn't have it amputated until a year after the bombings, a year and a half after the bombings. And so then she ran and finished, supposedly, the race 6 months after the amputee surgery. So then, you know, they go and they tell her the whole story. So there's this piece on Mashable. And for those of you who don't know, Mashable's kind of... Are you familiar with Mashable?
It's a dating site? No. What is it?
I don't think it's a dating site.
I don't know.
No, it's just kind of like a... It's just kind of like a one of these newer sort of hipster kind of blogs.
Okay.
So this is like telling, this thing is telling the story, starts telling the story last April in 2014 about how she's faced with this decision 1 year after the bombing. And then, it, you know, I
oh,
think
she's
I'm ready
in a
to
wedding
top it
dress.
Off. So then it goes, yeah. So it tells the whole story about how, about the wedding dress and how she, I mean, about how she, you know, fell in love and the whole story and, you know, and the entire cheesy script that goes with it, because if you read this thing called The 17th Surgery, it just goes right into this, you know, subpar script writing narrative that someone turned in and got rejected, you know, for just how awful it is. And then you can go through and look at all the different photos. So it's just, it's not just an article, it's a full piece on Mashable where it's kind of almost like a drama. It's a little bit of a drama and they give it a title and they go through the whole narrative. So it's not just a short piece on a page or a short article on a page. It's got some more length to it with complete with the photos and everything. And so, you know, where you read, when you read through it, you can see them setting up this story.
Oh, it's pretty graphic, too. Yeah.
Yeah. But this is the early part of the story. And in the very first picture, you can see how she's mic'd up. The mic is connected to the wedding dress, which also has the tag on, still on it, on her left side. And so it's like, is she trying on wedding dresses? And she has this camera crew following her around, and she's got... You know, this whole photo shoot that they're doing with her.
Let's do a reverse Google search.
Yeah, I don't know if you'll be able to find anything, but go for it and see. No, definitely give it a try.
Just her head.
But the idea is that they're...
Oh, my God. They're not letting me use snippet on her. Did you see that? They're not letting me use snippet. I have never found a website that didn't let me use snippet. That is weird. That's fine, bitch. I'll print screen you. Stop me now. Sorry, I get a little...
Or you could try a tin eye. But, so anyways, I just want to comment about the production that's happening in her life, you know? From the time of the bombing to now, you know, she's got these media outlets telling her story and making a production and building foundations and following her around with cameras while she tries on wedding dresses and capturing these intimate moments in her life, like when she's in the hospital bed, when she's, you know, with the doctor and, you know, showing, taking just these intimate pictures of her damaged leg. And then when you scroll down and there's the picture of her fiance, picture of her in her wedding ring, and then she and her mom trying on this dress, has been proposing to her while she's sitting in a wheelchair crying. And it's definitely supposed to, you know, it's meant to tug on your heartstrings so that you would just be inspired by it. And you wouldn't
feel... The same story at Mashable. You're right.
You would never feel, you know, animosity towards them. You just feel sorry for them. That's designed... But then it's also designed to tell this narrative of, you know, Boston Strong. It's like this, you have to have hope, you have to, you know, they're put into these positions to be role models and to, you know, spread... like, inspire people. And...
All right.
But then you can clearly tell from the picture of him proposing to her that it's just inauthentic, you know? His hair is all perfect. It's like, you know, they picked out exactly everything down to the last detail and then had this photo shoot.
Right.
Because otherwise it's absurd to think that it was a genuine moment and they wanted to share it with the world. And so they had one of their friends there taking a picture with his camera with the perfect lighting and everything. I mean, it's just, we have to stop
even though
looking
she's
at
mic'd.
Things from just, oh, how sweet and emotional.
Yeah. You're right.
Then you can go down, then you can go down and there's, and some of those pictures of her leg, I mean, certainly very well could be a silicone prosthetic, like fake rubber Hollywood prop leg. If you look at the main one of her leg, it definitely looks like a rubbery material to me. I mean, who's to say what that would really look like?
I think she's mic'd in every picture.
She's mic'd at the doctor's.
Yeah.
Yeah, so are they? There's documentary crew following her. There's going to be one of those. So let's move on. Now, so that was from last April. Now, this next one is from November of 2014. And that's in the Boston Globe. The Boston Globe article. So it's continuing to tell the narrative of this 27-year-old Texas woman and how she was injured in the blast and then her decision to amputate and then falling in love and the whole, you know, the whole story. And it's the story that's going to be happily ever after, you know? Like, they show her in bed with her foot up on the thing. Talk about what the doctor says this and that and this, and there were no hiccups. And I feel like the average person that has to suffer through something like this is going to be so, it's going to react so differently than all of these people who react with hope and strength and embracing the idea of being a public figure in the public eye. Whereas, if that happened to you, you'd want privacy. You and your family, you know? You wouldn't want all these media people running around. But then they end up running with this position of, you know, you're now in a position of, serving the public in some way. And so you have these foundations and then charities, yeah. And then she writes a book and there's this whole movie made out of her, a TV show. She does like interview circuits, you know, she goes on David Letterman, like they become like famous almost. They become celebrities. Amputee celebrities. So yeah, this one's from November, and there's just more details in it that, you know, they had this whole thing where they won. There's this website called The Knot, and they do 2014 Dream Wedding Contest.
Oh dear!
And so she and her husband end up winning. They end up winning the contest for The Knot. So The Knot funded their wedding.
Shocker.
So, yeah, I know. So it was this big cross-promotional thing between them and The Knock, you know what I mean? It's total PR 101, like marketing cross-promo.
That is hysterical. What a coincidence she won the best wedding ever.
I know. And then, you know, it says, people mourn the loss of a limb just like a loved one. But if you're truly focusing on function, the reality may become with quality care and rehabilitation that they may do better with amputation. And this is the person who said, there's a quote from this guy who advised one fund Boston's second round of distributed aid last summer. So there's this whole other thing called One Fund Boston. It's just the one fund where all the money goes to that one fund. The one fund's initial distribution of $61 million in 2013 gave $1.2 million to each survivor who lost one limb, less $125,000 to nearly $950,000 to 69 others who were hospitalized for at least one night, based exclusively on how long they were hospitalized. DiMartino's extended hospitalization would have put her at the top of that range. But the second round of one fund awards, totaling nearly $19 million this summer, took into account the potential for future amputation as well as lifelong need for other factors.
Thank God. Thank God they did that, because she would have been out this second round. That was fortuitous.
Right, and then they've got, you know, they're calling her DiMartino now because she's married, you know what I mean? By the time this article comes out in November. So I just didn't want the listener to get confused as who's DiMartino, because that was her husband's name.
Right, but she was Gregory, correct?
Yes, she was Rebecca Gregory. And then and there's this whole thing with the nurse where the nurse holds her hand when she crosses the finish line in her wheelchair. Last year, she crossed the finish line. So that's that one. Then we'll move on to the next one, which is in December. So that last one was November, and this one, it will be December. And this is U.S. News, or I guess NBC.
But I have to tell you, Sammy, looking at the picture of her in her wheelchair, and she has her baseball hat on, and she's crying, and her supporters around her are pushing her wheelchair, it's hard to believe
you were cutting
fake.
Out. I lost you.
Oh, do you hear me now?
Go ahead and repeat that last part.
Okay. Watching her in the wheelchair go over that finish line, and she's crying, and she's wiping her tears away, and the people are pushing her chair and helping her. It's so hard to believe this is fake. You know?
Well, for the average person, sure, it is. Because you don't want to think, I mean, even for me sometimes, I don't want to think, oh, at least, you know, everyone's lying. You know, I had an interaction with someone today where this person is actually from Boston. I know him. I know he's from Boston. But he lives here. And he's like, hey, I know people who were there. And I said, I don't doubt anyone was there. I'm sure there were lots of people who saw this thing happen.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh my God, I saw this thing happen a block away. We couldn't get close, but we saw it all happen. You know, so we were there. I was there. How dare you? I was there. It's like, yeah, you were there, but you could be completely clueless that you were just a bystander witness to some theater event, some street theater or something, not what as it appeared. It's not really easy to pull those things off. It's not really that hard to pull those things off as long as, you know, the area is contained and no one can get too close. So there certainly could be someone that says, oh, I was there. And so then I asked him, well, do you know anyone that was injured? And he said, no, but I have friends of friends who were injured. And I said, okay, well, are their names in the public domain? In other words, have they been quoted in a newspaper or on the radio or, you know, had their story told or will witness or something? And he said, I don't know, and I don't want to talk about it anymore. And I said, okay, well, I said, okay, well, let me just ask you a couple questions and then we can just drop it. I'm like, have you ever seen anyone with an injury? He said, no, I have friends of friends. You know, and I have no reason to doubt him. Like, I don't think he's lying. I just think he hears something from someone who heard something, you know? I mean, you'll find so many cousins and uncles and people who saw something at all these events. And they're, unfortunately, they're their testimony, their eyewitness testimony, doesn't hold as much water as all the other evidence that we see. You know, that evidence is weighs so much more than someone's silly little story about someone that he knew who knew someone. And so anyways, he said no, he said friends of friends. And I said, okay. And then he said, but I've seen pictures of, you know, I've seen pictures of, you know, injured people and injured wounds and da da da. And I was like, okay. He's like, and not from mainstream media sources. But this is just a person who has no exposure to any, doesn't understand even what like a PSYOP is or any kind of concepts like that. So I'm just asking simple questions to hear what their experience is without, I'm not going to go into this long explanation, you know. So then I always said, okay, thanks. Because he was basing it all on hearsay and pictures.
Yeah, I doubt he made that up about the pictures.
I mean, even if he saw pictures, doesn't mean anything, you know? We've all seen pictures. The pictures are there for us to see. You know? Here is... I mean, what are the odds? And the whole marriage, and she's had 14 surgeries, and... I think I sent you that one. Yeah, the NBC News
US
one.
News? NBC
yeah.
News. All right, yeah.
U.S. News, yeah. She said 14 surgeries. She graduated to a walking boot. So this is December 24th, 2013. She was in a boot. So this is... Oh, okay, so this. I guess my chronology was wrong because I didn't look at the date, the year on this one. So this is the first... This would have been the first or the decision to chop it off. So you can see the chronology of how they tell the story. Because this is December of the previous year. See, so they're telling the story about how now she's in a boot. She's had 14 surgeries. And then we go on later to that whole piece about the 17th surgery. And it just continues telling more details of what happened and the people involved and the doctors. And
oh, my God.
It's how they fill
this
in all the
crazy
gaps, you know?
There's so much detail. You should read a little bit of her wounds.
Hang on a second.
All right. It's a nice phone ring. I like that ringtone. I haven't heard that in quite a while.
No matter what happens, I'm going to be fine. I am fine, she said. I'm just happy to be able to see another day.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's always this positive, and it should be, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, but you have to at least recognize that there's a constant theme of being positive, Boston strong, we will survive, you know, we'll persevere, and, you know, just taking the ball and running with it, and next thing you know, she's going to be running the marathon again. So that's today, which is the next link that I want to send over. My Fox Boston.
Alrighty.
There's a video of her completing the long journey. And she ran the race and crossed the finish line today. And I suppose...
In her magic leg. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
Now maybe she, you know... This is where, you know, sometimes I like to speculate. Okay, well, is this person former military, maybe? Or, you know, amputee, is a real amputee from another accident or something like that? You know, let's say she was in the military or something and she lost a limb overseas. You know, they would reassign her. They would reassign her. Then they would say, don't worry, we're going to take care of you. We're going to take care of you and your family. You know, we're going to show you what it means, you know, to be military in this country or whatever. And then they would reassign her to this thing that she would be morally in line with. Like, we want you to participate in this stage theater so that we can help get guns off the streets and protect terrorism and na-na-na-na-na.
Right.
You know, and she would...
They could tell her anything, you know?
Yeah, but she
wouldn't
matter. She wouldn't feel... She would just feel like she's telling a little white lie for a much greater good and a greater cause. Like, that's... I could see how someone... If there's no need to even think, oh, these people are, you know, evil, and they're... I mean, they're liars, for sure, but... I could see the case to make it come off more genuine, you know? Oh, we're going to give you a book deal. She's going to get a book deal. She's going to run with it. You know, and she's going to be well rewarded, and she's going to be a member, you know, upstanding member of the community, and people look up to her. She's a role model, da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, she very well could have really lost that limb at some point in combat or in some other scenario that was certainly not, you know, I mean, accidents happen all the time, and people don't get into these situations where suddenly they're celebrities and they're making tons of money and they're on TV and they've got book deals and Dancing with the Stars and interviews and all that.
But wouldn't you think, Sammy, this is just a role she's playing, and she doesn't have to do this role 24/7. She can be herself when she wants to be, you know? She only has to do this thing when she's got the mic in front of her. Otherwise, who are you? You look like her. Oh, really? I'm not. Here's my driver's license. Look, it's not me. Yeah, okay, sorry, thanks.
And then she just disappears?
She just plays her normal self, goes to the Fred Meyer after work. And
but she's not.
Maybe she doesn't work. I don't know.
But her real name's not Rebecca Gregory. Yeah, I mean, that makes
maybe
sense.
Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't, but yeah, I have a feeling it's only a role.
Yeah, it definitely is only a role, whether or not it's entirely fictional, or there is this real person named Rebecca Gregory who, you know,
right.
who has a family and a network. That way when someone comes and says, hey, I know her, or my friend knows her, or I know that person, how dare you, then you'd be like, oh, okay, so it's a real person, but it's still, you don't know if someone's lying to you.
There could be many levels, right? Many ways to do this, I would imagine.
Sure. There doesn't need to be one way or another. But then we go to her Facebook page.
Yeah, because it seems like community connection is really important in her story. Don't you think?
Yeah, and I feel like they definitely at least attempt to make that... where is it out here? To make that a part of... So here's our Instagram page. We'll do that one first.
Wow. She is
Rebecca
hooked
Gregory,
up.
Oh. Mom to an amazing little boy, Boston Marathon survivor, amputee, motivational speaker, and blessed for every single new day. Then you can go through and see all these pictures.
Wow.
And why is it that always these people are always just, they turn out to be heroes and shining lights and examples? Nobody ever gets depressed and withers away.
These pictures are extremely professional. I mean, they're at angles that aren't likely to be done by regular people. Like this up in the corner to get her on a couch with her kid, like bed folded out. And they must be at the opposite top end of the room to get that picture. Wow.
Even better would be her Facebook page.
Wow.
So her Facebook page is kind of like its own PR machine. I wonder how long this page
has been. Oh, that was Instagram. Okay, let's go Facebook now.
See, she's only had a Facebook page since 2013. She didn't have one before that. Oh, well, I guess this is just... Maybe she did have one, but this is just the new hope. new day, new hope. So it's like the inspiration page for the public. She's a public figure. She even says on her page she's a public figure. So all these people just become public figures, whatever that even means. What does it mean to be a public figure?
I'm a public figure.
You know, I mean, part of
listen
it means...
Listen to that.
Part of it means, because on her Facebook or on her Instagram page, she says that she is a motivational speaker. But as a Boston Marathon survivor and amputee, she is a public figure. And as a public figure, she probably does certain things. In addition, like, you know, part of the motivational speaking being part of that, she'll probably release a book if she hasn't already. Let's see if she has. Let me go to Amazon real quick.
Alrighty. I'm looking at some of the comments. If God is for you, who can stand against you?
On her Facebook
you are my
page.
Inspiration. Yeah, I had my left leg amputated 1 month ago after you did. Oh, 1 month after you did. You are truly a strong woman. You think this Jessica Peterman Gurney's running the Boston Marathon a year after that?
Not even a year, 6 months.
Wow.
It doesn't look like she has any books out. Let me go back to what we're looking at here.
Lisa Kazvinsky, as far as I'm concerned, you were the Boston Marathon winner.
That's what everybody's worried about.
That's the reason they...
Sorry, that was my fault. What am I doing here?
Set the automatic video playing on those news channel things.
It was that Oklahoma City video that I had queued up on YouTube.
Oh.
So on her, so her whole page, her whole Facebook page is... You know, the one on the 15th is worth reading. That was the one that I read earlier. It's extremely emotional to look back on the last 2 years of my life. To remember what it felt like to be bleeding out on the pavement, wondering if I would ever see my child smile again. In a matter of minutes, my entire world changed. Everything I knew was literally blown to pieces, and I was forced to start picking them up one by one. It's been a long road. Some days I'm not quite sure how I've made it out of bed. And if I'm being really honest, a few times I haven't.
There you go. There's some grit for you.
And then it just goes on and on and on. And it's just so canned and like... This is something that someone would write in the seventh grade. And they were writing like a... You know, creative short story.
Right. And, you know, people usually don't write in summaries like that. Like Facebook posts. You know, you're not summarizing entire years. You just talk about what happened today, really. Don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, she's probably trying to embrace her public figure role and provide nothing but positive optimism and words of encouragement to the people so they'll look up to her and she can embrace that as a role model. You know, she can embrace that role, which is part of the whole operation for her anyways. You know, and then if you go down further, you can see she's selling like those blue Rebecca Strong t-shirts. So she's making money off of t-shirts and I'm sure that people are buying them.
Oh, you heck know. Yeah. If I was a chick who got my leg chopped off, I'd buy one.
Here's what she wrote on April 6th. Sometimes you just need to cry. And tonight my heart is aching, so that's what I will do. Allowing myself to be vulnerable, though, is something that I have been unconsciously afraid of. And I guess it's normal for us all to be from time to time. After all, we live in a world where too much emotion can be mistaken for weakness, and no one ever wants to appear weak. But tonight the tears kept falling and falling, and there is something so healing about each one. And it goes on and on, and it's just this whole thing about her heart and my fellow survivors and the victims' families and the jury and the judge. Tomorrow's a big day. This is like right before the verdict, you know? And...
April 1st. You gotta go to April 1st and look at that one.
Oh, I'm looking at it. It's the April Fools. Oh, where she says, I'm an actress, da-da-da-da-da.
It starts out, Dear Conspiracy Nut, in regards to the message you wrote me saying I need to come clean before I live with the devil. What conspiracy people talk like that? Wow.
Yeah, I honestly believe that, you know, there would be some, she looks like the type of person who would embrace that role. If someone came and said, hey, you know, we've got a role that we want you to play. We want you to, and we'll take care of all your medical expenses and we'll take care of you and your family and you'll get a ton of money and you can be a public, you can do something good for the public. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, like I was saying earlier, like morally for us, we would think, oh my God, they want us to lie about this and that, you know? But if it was all in line with her morals, she wouldn't even think twice, you know?
Right. Yeah, it'd just be a job. She wouldn't. Where's she at? Wow, she is so, wow, what a public figure. Day two in Italy. Oh.
And then you can get, you know, together we can change the world. That's the quote on her Facebook page. Wow, that's so original. So you can contact.
She's at UNESCO Cities Marathon. Who's UNESCO? That's weird affiliation to be at.
Is it realistic that someone in her position would be able to run the Boston Marathon 6 months after an amputee?
Right.
But you could run. Would you be able to learn how to run with the prosthetic and rehab all back to? I mean, in the NBA, you know, a player will have a really bad injury and it'll take them a full year to come back. And I'm talking, you know, basketball players. And that's just an injury. That's not an amputee.
Wow.
You know, if you tear your Achilles or ACL or something like that in basketball, you're going to be out for a really long time. You have to rehab it back. You might miss the whole season. And that's not having your entire leg blown off.
By a bomb filled with, what was it filled with? Nails?
Supposedly, something like that. You know, but she had to go through this whole year and a half of losing the leg, you know, like it. And then amputee, and then 6 months later she's running and finishing this race. It would take so long to rehab from that.
Let's Google that, actually. How long does it take an amputee to use fake leg? Fact sheet, prosthetics. Boom. There you go. Let's see. What is the prosthetic? How will it work? When will I get it? Generally, let's see. Fit, how long will it last? Taking care, what can I prepare? It's not going into detail. Can the limb break down? Once I have been fitted and feel comfortable, what will happen next? Plan on making a follow-up visit to your prostheticist. A normal part of your life. Proper fit and socket and good alignment will ensure the prosthesis is useful to you. Prostheses, like cars, need regular maintenance and repair to continue efficient functioning. Well, they don't say how long it would take.
Well,
I heard, though, it's like a couple of years.
It's going to vary from individual to individual in terms of their physical therapy and their regimen and their healing time and how and their, you know, their body. But we're not talking about just healing. We're talking about rehabbing to the point where you have to train, you're training and you're now running a marathon again.
Right, you got to learn to walk on it. And then learn to walk on it good. And then with stamina.
I mean, if you just took the average person who didn't have that and they had to train and run a marathon, then that would be a huge accomplishment. Well, suppose, you know, she was already a runner, but still to come back to be able to do that in such a short amount of time.
Amputee recovery. Let's see. Oh, that's like that day recovery. You know, that could be your team speak feeding back.
What is it?
Hold on. Yeah. If the sound is set too high and you don't talk, it keeps trying to pick up the background noise.
I see.
Which means you got to kind of keep talking.
Or I mute. Or I go on mute for a moment.
Okay. All right. So just looking to see how long it takes from stem to stern, from when you first get your prosthetic to you can walk. 6 to 8 weeks. All right. Here's one. Frequently asked questions. How do I get one? You get a fitted. What if the prosthesis doesn't fit? I can only say that word so many times, Sammy, before I just give up. Ooh, they weigh like 8 pounds. 4 to 8 pounds. Ooh, I didn't even consider the weight. They got no muscle helping them.
It would take
so you're
forever
lugging that thing around.
I feel like it would take forever just to learn how to walk with one of those.
Right, because on your leg, it does it itself, but with the prosthetic, you got to do this motion to keep it working.
I mean, she's running a marathon so it's 6 like, months later, which is what, over the winter?
Since
she trained and learned, and she was able to get the training in over the winter and rehab and then run the marathon. If you go to onefundboston.org, you can read about the fund. And then there's another one. I'll send you the link here. Natives of Longmeadow run for Ellie Fund. See what this is all about. Natives and childhood friends who currently live in South Boston will run the 119th Boston Marathon on Monday for the Ellie Fund. The Ellie Fund supports breast cancer patients and their families in non-medical ways. Oh, I see. So this is not one of the funds of... Never mind.
Ellie Fund. Elliot.
Then there's America's Fund, which is americasfund.org, and there's a Boston Marathon Relief Fund in that.
I wonder how much money people are raking in. Wow. What an interesting scam, though. Think about it. Who thought of that? You know? The whole Boston Marathon thing, to come up with that, whoever came up with that was a brilliant idea. We need something. What could we do?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't seem to me to be that hard.
Well, I guess if you already have a a drill mapped out. This is the same as a drill, right? You just, everyone has their roles. They do their thing.
Yeah, and then everyone gets a new... It's not like these people go back to their old lives, you know what I mean? Their lives change, and then they get this new sort of public figure type of thing where, you know, their careers change. They have all these separate streams of revenue coming in and T-shirts and whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. They get
and then,
real
you know,
famous.
You know, another thing that's kind of interesting, too, is that there's... I haven't seen a lot of it, but I've seen... I've seen a little bit of this new technology with all of these prosthetics kind of emerge into the public consciousness. So... Every now and then you'll see more, I'll see videos about, that are unrelated to the bombing, but they're just about this type of technology. Let me show you an example
is that,
of what I'm talking about.
Is that the one with the separate fingers that kind of can do all those things?
I know what you're talking about, and that's pretty cool too. Let me see, I've got something here. Where is it? Almost there. Where is it? It's almost like the spotlight has been shined on this sector of technology to where now it's more in the public eye. Oh gosh, where is that video? I guess I don't have it. I thought I had it here. Oh, is that it? No. Like, they have these new... they're kind of like these running devices. They sort of look like that same technology that's in the bionic kind of limbs, you know? But it's not for amputees. It's just the same. It's just utilizing that same technology to where you attach both of these things. They're kind of like these mini pogo sticks almost. You attach them to your shoes and you run with them, so your shoes are completely locked into these things. But now you're a foot and a half or two taller, and you have these wide these really long strides, so you can run faster and leap over things and. Where you're 20, 25 miles an hour. I wish I had a video of what I'm talking about. Let's see if I can find it on YouTube.
Is that with those backward-looking feet things?
I think so.
So would a serious athlete, once he got one leg removed, he'd be like, fuck it, I'm getting the other one removed so I can use those things.
So K-A-G, say more.
I don't know if it's called ostrich something. It's not the best video of it, but bionic boots, is that what they're called? Here we go. Send you this link.
All right. Oh my, they're actually called bionic boots. That's funny.
Yeah, click on that.
The Bionic Boot.
Here in my garage, just bought this new Lamborghini here.
Set up commercial.
Drive up here in the Hollywood Hills.
Yeah, ad.
But you know what I like?
Dang it.
A lot
Hold
more
on.
Than materialistic Mute. Things.
Keeps moving on me. Skip ad. There we go. I thought I got ad blocker. bionic boot, this guy running in the desert. Oh, you can have legs in these. There you go. So this guy's out in the desert, running on the highway in his bionic boots through the desert. And you see, like, the mountains. I think he's in air. Now he's running on rocks and gravel. And he stopped really fast. And now we're seeing him jump over. He's on a trail by the ocean. Wow, he's on a super rocky trail. Now he's back on highway running. Wow. All right. We got the idea. This guy can, and he's got his real feet strapped into them. So he didn't have to lose his legs to get his bionic boots.
Yeah, and I feel like since the bombing, I've seen a lot more of this kind of tech. So I wonder if there's an additional, you know, additional purpose of the PSYOP, which is to push, like, new technology and use these events to kind of bring light to them, you know?
They need their robot body. That's why. We got the robot brain. We just don't have the body yet. So maybe this is people working on the body. So anyway.
So I did
have you looked at robots lately in the news? Sammy?
No, I have definitely been focusing a lot more on science stuff. And pseudoscience. Remember the last time we talked, I told you that I use a P in front of science now?
Yes. I like that. I want to do that, even if it gets me fired. Joking.
You should do it. It has a whole new meaning. We should try to get it added to the Urban Dictionary. You know, can give it this, you know, standard on non-obtrusive definition. Because it's not necessarily pseudoscience.
I don't know. I think robots are. They haven't advanced since, like, the 90s. I don't know. I've been watching robot videos for a long time on the internet. They're not getting any better. In fact, they're getting worse.
Oh, yeah.
It's like Japanese robot, but it's just a face. Or it's that weird thing that falls downstairs.
The Honda?
Oh, yeah.
There's this other one that I saw recently. It's called, let me see if I can find it. Yeah, that doesn't seem like there's much. I mean, I think that there will be, you know, sort of like Siri is a good robot where you can just ask questions and they just search and they provide the answer.
Right.
So if you say,
voice
well, what,
recognition.
Yeah, where yeah. It starts off simply like at what time is it and what's the weather, what's the temperature right now. But then you can say, you know, you can have it search for any question. It's just going to go search Wikipedia or search the internet and then just dictate and repeat this thing back to you. But to actually move and make dinner and breakfast and stuff, like, where it's completing, you know, physical tasks.
I mean, it could appear to be getting you a beer, but you would have to set the coordinates for it to do it or, you know, at least lead the way. Sometimes you can draw a line and there's these lines the robots follow.
But sure. But it's not going to visually recognize something and then make a decision based on what's interpreting in around its environment.
Right.
Oh, I don't know if you ever saw that ping pong The guy who made the ping pong robot to hit the ball back to him.
No, I've not seen that.
And then it turned out to be a fake. Check this out.
They always are. Well, I saw the robot, some robot in the news lately, and they were talking about how it's helping. And then they showed how it was put together. It's like, it's got no insides. That robot can't work. It's got no insides. You see, it's got to have insides.
Check out really the link funny. I just sent you.
All right. Ping pong robot. Does it say it's fake in here?
No. Oh. Might want to mute.
They're going to hear some, they'll hear the ping pong ball, just say. Yeah, it's in German. And there's a camera, okay. Camera, watching the camera. Eyes, okay. That's pretty clever. It's doing a good job of hitting it back.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a German, of course. It's a German man.
It turns out the whole thing is...
Oh, he wrote a program.
Yeah, it shows the whole software.
No, he never did this.
And it turned out to be a fake. It was just CGI. Because it's easier to fake
it
than to actually have...
Well, yeah, look at that arm.
To be able to...
Yeah, the arm of that, if you look real close, it doesn't have any insides.
But you can see...
That's how you know it's fake, Sammy.
What? What is?
When they've got no insides, even the arm has a few cords, but not enough to show all those movements. Wow. Easier to fake it. Dang it.
Yep.
And isn't that the truth? Can you say 9/11? Easier to fake it.
I think I get more and more skeptical of certain technologies. Because I see so many things where it's, you know, they'll show you this, it'll be an article on Gizmodo or one of these tech sites, and it's like, you know, some technology that's coming down the pipeline soon, and it's pretty impressive. And they're just showing you a video of the prototype, and then you never ever hear anything about it again. Never gets released.
Can you say TED Talks? That's exactly what happens to TED Talks.
Yeah.
All that pie in the sky they talk about, none of it ever comes
ever.
To fruition. Ever.
You'll see, here's a, this is Jib, or what is it called? Jibbo? Jibbo the Family Robot? You heard of this one?
No.
Yeah, you should watch this. It's funny.
I need a family robot.
It's creepy.
This is on vigilantecitizen.com.
And you can just watch the YouTube video on that page.
Okay.
You don't have to watch the whole thing, but... Just you can just see it's worth watching just to see the style of a commercial and everything.
It looks like a fan. Is that you're saying that's a robot?
Mm-hmm. That little blue thing is his eyeball. Supposed to be.
Yeah. Oh. It's got one eye. Oh, it's slow to load. Aw. Thank you. I have a virus or some stupid shit. And they told me it was Microsoft Security Essentials that I downloaded. It came with web security extension that's just freaking taken over my whole freaking computer. It's so frustrating. Why is it? Its face looks kind of tore up. What's going on?
The robot?
Yeah, it's like, is that it angry? Is that
here,
sort
I'll
of angry
play.
Face?
Oh, actually, no, okay. I've already seen it. You should play it.
Ah, she's not scrolling like I need her to scroll.
Want hair that's two times stronger? Just add Pantene.
There you go, Fox.
The Pantene formula works.
That was the Fox thing. They just did a commercial out of nowhere. Maybe that's why it was slow. I can't. My computer's too slow to read this, hear this.
Okay, well, you can check it out later.
Yeah, I will. I'll let that sit there. I'm going to close that.
We should talk about that article that I sent you last time, and we had a conversation about it, but we weren't recording.
All right.
The amputee, remember? The Russian head transplant?
Yeah. The head got amputated.
Well, not yet. They say they're going to do that.
They say they're going to try to. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, I think I can find it in our last Skype chat. Let's see.
Oh, there's more Boston Marathon.
Okay. Here we go.
All right. Did you find it?
Yeah, I posted this. In
we did some polar. Oh, okay.
Russian man to undergo first head to body transplant.
Of course.
Doctors,
it'd be in Russia. Okay.
It's just so ridiculous. Doctors seem to be a step closer to performing a breakthrough surgery, transplanting a human head onto another body. A Russian man with a rare genetic muscle wasting disorder has volunteered to be the first to try the procedure. I'm very interested in technology and anything progressive that might change people's lives for the better. It's just such a weird quote. He's 30 years old. He's a computer scientist. He said the disease is getting worse every year and that people with Herdnig-Hoffman disorder, a disease that wastes muscles, don't live longer than 20 years. So it would be a chance to prolong his life and help scientific research in the process.
Well, then wouldn't his face muscles attribute?
Interesting, they added a little 8-minute interview with the surgeon to this page on SoundCloud, voice snippet. And then, so this is the best part, where the operation is set to be concluded by renowned Italian surgeon Sergio Canavero, who sees the procedure as comparable to space exploration. And then he says, Russia sent Yuri Gagarin into space with fair chances of dying. America sent Neil Armstrong to the moon with fair chances of dying. And the chances here are much, much better. Wonder if he means that they're much, much better of him dying. And then there's this whole TED Talk. You know, it's an 8-minute TED. He gives an 8-minute TED Talk. And I haven't even gotten through the whole thing, but it's just, they use TED to push their fake science.
Why do I take Metamucil every day? Because it helps me skip the bad stuff. That's what I like to call the meta.
Where, 4-in-1, how did these ads start? I'm not touching anything. They just start talking all on their own. All right, is there a date when they're going to remove his head? So we can come back and check.
The date of this was April 10th, and they said that he's going to do it in a few months. Thought I remember reading that somewhere. Oh, yeah. No, and then the operation is set to last up to 36 hours and will cost over $11 million. So 36
11.
3 plus 6 is 9, and then 11. It's the best.
You want to play the... It's exact. There it is. Want to play the SoundCloud?
No, I don't even want to hear it. Well, let's hear it.
All
let's
right.
Hear it.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
We can at least hear a little bit of it.
RT, question more.
I'm a functional neurosurgeon.
Can you hear that?
Yes.
Was finding a way to reconnect the spinal cord, which I did. All the rest of the surgery has already been done by Dr. White. It is absolutely feasible in the domain of current surgical techniques. I decided to do that 30 years ago when I first read about Dr. White's work. And, of course, he didn't know how to fix the spinal cord. And I just swore that I would have found a way to do that. And actually, I just made the case when I was pretty sure I could do that. And it took me 30 years. So.
Does he sound Italian to you? He doesn't sound Italian. He sounds Russian pretending to be Italian. But anyway.
He doesn't sound Italian.
And didn't we say there was a. What? No.
He doesn't sound Italian, no.
Mm. And didn't they say they're using a special glue?
Special biological glue.
They just glue and all. Yeah.
An ultra sharp scalpel will be used to cut through the spinal mm-hmm. cord, and a special biological glue will be used to connect the head to the new body.
Well, of course.
But they don't talk about.
Oh, he did a TED talk.
Yeah, he did a TED talk. They don't talk about how the spinal. The cerebral spinal fluid. Can you just take someone's head and put it on another person's body and. Everything's just gonna start firing again?
Well.
Once the systems are shut down. It doesn't make any sense, like, because they say that.
What about rejection?
After the operation, the body will be taken from a brain dead but otherwise healthy donor. So, what does that mean?
Oh, so this is a technical paper. Go ahead. Sorry.
The body
so dumb.
Brain dead, but otherwise healthy donor. So, what does that even mean? So, how long is this body? Where do they get this body? Is it in rigor mortis? If the brain is dead, it's otherwise healthy. What does that even mean? How can you have a healthy body if a brain's dead?
Well, assuming it's on life support, right? It could be in the hospital. I guess, right, when the family says pull the plug? Yeah. Yeah, imagine the families all around, the doctor's like, dude.
But if the family says pull the plug,
yeah.
Then that means life support is not just the heart. You're in a coma, your brain is still functioning.
If you have an oxygen tube down your throat, right? And that's really keeping things going. As long as the oxygen is going, I think your heart can stop, right? Wait, or there's something going on.
I feel like if your brain is dead, the body's eventually going to die too. There's only a matter of time. Can you keep a body online while the person's brain is dead? How would the organs know what to do?
Right.
If the brain wasn't sending signals to the
Well, I think brain dead doesn't mean no brain activity. There's minimal brain activity. Just not enough to say that you can wake up.
So
yeah, you're
okay.
Right.
So
I mean, there has to be some
carcass. So let's say they have this thing, whatever it is. How long, so do they wait until they have a candidate? Okay, we have a body now. So we're going to prep you for surgery, in the morning. Is it something that has to it seems like if that body, if they found a body in that condition, they would only have a limited amount of time to do that surgery. it's not something that they could plan months in advance. Are they going to put this body on ice and it's going to remain brain dead but otherwise healthy? And they just have it in the refrigerator it's still...
Well, people have been on life support for 6 months to a year. Their body slowly dwindles away and atrophies. So, you know, they wouldn't want it on life support too long because of that fact. But, you know, you could keep it up to a year and everything would still be fine except for the atrophy.
But is that the same as a brain dead but otherwise healthy donor? I'm just not sure what that even means. Okay, so
right.
Fine. So let's say that's the case. So then what? They remove the head and they say that they cut it with a scalpel. You would think they would use a laser or something
extra
more
sharp,
just cutting through the spinal cord. Yeah, and then how are they gonna? How is everything gonna line up and just shut back? I mean, you would have to reattach all your scalene muscles and your SCM and all these muscles and the vertebrae and the cartilage and then the nerves and these, I mean, and then everything's just going to start firing again and the cerebrospinal fluid, which goes up and down and just click
right.
in. And I feel like
would all fall out.
Yeah. I mean, how would the spinal fluid be accepted by the new head and vice versa?
Well, that's, you know, I think anyone in the medical industry would say, first of all, if it's not a perfect protein match, you can't use it. Right?
Yeah,
it has to be. Otherwise,
I'm sure there would be some sort of, you know, certain things that would have to match up, like blood type. And I feel like we've lost some sort of sync on our chat here.
Ah, we could have.
I think I kind of hear myself echoing now.
You stay there, let me go out and come back, okay?
Test, okay. Testing. Many medics are against carrying out the procedure, with a Californian doctor saying it's too overwhelming of a project to succeed, while others branded it too outlandish to consider and simply crazy. Medical science has come a long way to even consider this operation. The first successful transplant on a person happened back in 1905, with a cornea replaced by an Austrian surgeon. In 1967, a patient in South Africa received a new heart. Entire limbs are being replaced, too. For instance, surgeons gave a man in France a new right hand in 1998. See, it's just that easy.
Cornea, hand,
people
head.
People should never even... There should never be a question. If you lose a finger or a hand or an arm, you should absolutely be able to get a new one. If they can put a new head on someone, then a hand should be no problem.
No.
Could you really have this brain working with a foreign heart in such a way that... I feel like it's just a, you know, then they have this TED talk to push the idea. And TED is a whole, we could just do a whole talk on that.
How would you, the nerves even line up? Could the nerves even line up like that? I guess they are, but I'm thinking difference.
Like craniosacral area?
Right. Wouldn't there be differences in thicknesses that would be too much to reconcile for the brain? How do you get the each little tiny nerve and put it together?
Biological glue.
Oh, I forgot about the glue. That's right. Glue.
And if you notice, Ted really focuses on like environmental propaganda and science stories and even government military propaganda. Ted's like kind of definitely there to manipulate the public.
Oh my God, this is the science propaganda channel. That's what Ted is.
Absolutely.
They're the fake science propaganda. Oh, wow. Wow. I was so into TED for a while. I had two apps. I paid for a TED Talk app on my phone, by the way.
Oh, well, there's
so
some good stuff, but...
Well, yeah. You got to do that. You got to throw in the good stuff. Wow.
Yeah.
And TED Talks is science with a P. What?
You know, what is that?
Mom needs a spray. Starts with my favorite lemon lime.
What is that? Is that me or you?
I don't think it's
flavor.
Yeah, it's not me. I don't have any internet on. It's those ads.
Yeah,
they just start going all by themselves.
Sprite the Bronze Mix, created by Sprite.
Look for the speaker on one of your tabs.
I think it's you.
I got nothing on.
Hmm.
Is it? I don't have any internets.
Going. Yeah, like one of the things that they do, it's like I notice in this society, there's such a huge emphasis that's placed on individualism and, oh man, what is that? Let's see here.
Look for the little speaker, the black little speaker up on your, yeah. See what ad, you're getting attacked by an ad.
Sorry about that. So yeah, like the whole pushing of individualism and creativity as the source of success. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like a lot of times, you know, when you watch a TED Talk, and there's a lot of good stuff in them, I think. In terms of real efforts and science and stuff, but mostly I think it's propaganda and it's like pseudo-intellectualism, you know? This idea where...
It's expensive, you know that? It's like $3,000 to do a TED Talk, to be in the audience.
Right.
It's a cult.
Yeah, it's definitely got an elitist energy to it.
Yeah.
In terms of, oh, we're the, you know, we are the creators and the free thinkers and the scientists, and this is our vision for the future. And then there's a lot of social engineering and, you know, climate change and all that kind of saving the world bullshit and pushing the world into a better, into what we view as a in a better direction. But it's really laced with just propaganda and just pseudo-intellectualism, you know? It's like all these engineers of society who go to these, you know, high-priced universities, and whether they become lawyers or speakers or environmental activists or, you know, scientists and engineers and architects and, you know, all these creative ideas. And then definitely tech is all involved in there too, you know, as far as the dot-coms and everything. But they have this very distinct style of what they call progressive ideas that they you know, they weave into the culture in a cool way, and they, you know, in a way that's feels good to the average person, so that they don't really see or feel sort of the underbelly of the message. Like, I saw this one recently. It was on vaccines. And the guy goes on and talking about individual rights and na na na. And then he gets to this point in his TED Talk where he says, but you can't, your beliefs can't trump facts. And these are the facts. And everyone starts cheering, you know, and just pro-vaccine nonsense.
Oh, but really?
But it's sold in this way that has like an NPR flavor to it, so it's like calm and relaxing and intellectual. And so that people of all generations look up to these people that are giving these speeches and involved in these TED Talks, because they manage to gain your trust with their emotional bullshit and their pseudo-intellectualism.
It is hypnotizing too with that, you know, dark background everywhere, except on the speaker.
Yeah, it's definitely got its
style. Have you noticed they're all, most
style.
Of them.
And then, you know, it they're not going to bring on someone that they're not going to bring on someone that exposes climate change as a scam against the people. They wouldn't do that. They obviously have a very specific, particular social, political agendas. The economic as well, environmental.
Yeah. They do a lot on energy.
There's something, you know, too, that's like, you know, it's a little phony about. Nothing I can necessarily put my finger on, but in terms of the way it's all presented, it's a little phony and.
Well, I didn't think of that before, but now with my new Fakeology lens, I see how.
Yeah, oh, if you watch some of them, you can totally tell what they're trying to push. And they want to give people something to believe in. That's another thing that I've noticed about modern psyops that are not necessarily, like, loaded with fear. You know, like, NASA's not loaded with fear. That's more giving people something to believe in. You know, that we can make that we have the power of to create change. You know, we're all creative geniuses and we can bring about social change and justice in these areas. And you can see those same themes, like, with the bombing victims. And it's always, you know, taking a narrative and then lacing it with this feel-good, saving the world and making the world around us a better place and affecting social change without realizing that social change that they're pushing for is just their own enslavement, you know? Because with Ted, you could never be in the audience in Ted and stand up and ask a real difficult question, like a fakeologist question or something. They would all poo-poo you out of the room with their elitism, you know? But it's that, like...
Oh, yeah.
It's that extreme leftist, what they want to be considered progressive elitism. It's different than, like, the hosh-posh royalty, you know, or the other side, Republican, you know, more of the rich business elitism. It's not that same flavor of it. I mean, it's just, at the end of the day, it's the same, but... As far as the way that it's packaged. And there's a lot of flattery too, you know, like speakers flatter the audience and they make them laugh and it's, you know, it's about charm. And then they're led to believe in certain things that this person's saying because they wouldn't be on the stage at TED if they weren't legitimate. And there's only, you know, the speeches are only 10, 20 minutes long. You know, there's no time for analysis or, you know, things where someone might step in and say, hey, this is a great idea, but it's not feasible for these reasons. There's no, you know, there's not even any room for what they would label. They would label it as negative. No, we need to be positive and come together and we need unity and push forward with these ideas. And there's this definitely a, you know, a feeling of making the audience feel special.
Look at their faces. I do. I love looking at the audience faces. They're mesmerized by who's ever on the stage. They're all smiling and they're just like, oh, it's really bizarre.
It is.
If you do that, you know, it's not normal.
It's the
my question would be
the idea that you would even pay money to go listen to someone else talk about their vision of the future is so bizarre to me. You know, whether it's a scientist or, you know, the CEO of some company giving a talk or, you know, even like a religious figure. You know, people pay so much money to go listen to the Dalai Lama speak, you know? And I could understand that a little more, you know, if you look up to somebody and maybe they give you strength or spiritual teachings or whatever. But still.
Yeah.
It's just weird, you know, that you would pay to go listen to someone else's ideas on how you should live and you should behave and what you should think about science or the environment and what you should do to help, you know, and that you're paying this person to tell you all their beliefs and how they think everything should be organized.
Why did you use that word vision of the future?
Because a lot of times, you know, you'll have these
TED Talks.
I think that's what a lot of TED is about. Not just TED, but, you know, even if you go to, like, festivals, music festivals or conferences, you know, they'll have different conferences of different industries and people will give talks.
You know, that sounds perfect. Yeah, that's perfect. I mean, if someone were to summarize what TED Talks do, God, it's their vision of the future. Oh, my God, that's exactly what they do. They're giving you their vision of the future. Wow. That's perfect. That's a perfect explanation.
Yeah, and it's a total propaganda tool for everyone to be on board with these people's vision of the future. And it's always laced with and presented in a way that feels good, you know? Community, family, neighborhoods, you know, we're all in this together. Unity, the planet, save the planet.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's a really good explanation. I mean, the whole TED Talks thing, it's such propaganda now that I'm thinking about it. I didn't realize how big it was. They're getting everybody on board, aren't they?
Yeah, and sometimes, I mean, they're not necessarily trying to convince you of something in particular, but they're trying to convince you that this is, you know, this is the mature America right here, Ted. This is mature, you know, clear-headed America. It's not right-wing Republican craziness. It's the same way when you listen to NPR. Like, NPR is always presented in the way they speak on there is a lot different than mainstream media in terms of it's not just talking heads. They speak very calm and peacefully, and they're not shouting, and they don't have these confrontations, and they just kind of spread the news in that calm manner.
Right.
But it's just as much propaganda as anything else.
Yes, it is. You know, TED Talks is almost like half and half. It's the intellectual side of the left. I don't know if it's intellectual, but we fancy ourselves intellectual, I think. But the right, it's money, because almost every one of these things is making people money. And they talk about it, too, how, you know, how good the company's doing and things like that.
Sure, and, you know, I think the left is always going to be a little bit more clever because, you know, they're gonna package it in their morals, but really for them it's about the money, too.
Yeah. What did that beheading guy say? The guy who's going to change his head to a new body, he said we should accept new technologies. Is that what he said?
Something like that. Here, I'll read you what he said. He said, I'm very interested in technology and anything progressive that might change people's lives for the better. And I have a feeling that he didn't necessarily use that word progressive because he said it in Russian and they translated and they said, oh, let's use this word.
Doing That's the TED Talk for dummies.
Doing this isn't only an excellent opportunity for me, but it will also create a scientific basis for future generations, no matter what the actual outcome of the surgery is. And then it's like, yeah, I mean, oh, so did you read that Miles Mathis wrote this thing on Stephen Hawking. He's written a couple of Stephen Hawking papers.
Who smiles,
Mathis? Have you read any of them? Yeah.
Maybe. I don't recall.
He's got some good...
Did he do the OJ thing?
Yeah.
Okay, I read that one. It sounded familiar.
He's written a couple of interesting Stephen Hawking papers, but the recent one is he thinks that he was replaced in the mid-80s. So he kind of does like a picture analysis to show that he's not necessarily the same person.
Oh, really? That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I'm trying to find it. What is that Stephen Hawking one? I think that... He's written a couple of ones. I'm looking forward to reading all of them, but it doesn't make sense that he would be that he would be living this long with ALS. He should have died a long time ago.
Well, he's got, you know, he invented the black hole, so he's rich. I don't know.
There's the myth of the black hole. Miles Mathis wrote a paper about that. But no,
Stephen Hawking signals the end of modern physics. He admits there's no black hole by Miles Mathis.
Yeah, but he wrote another one recently. I just can't find it. Yeah, and it was supposed to be settled that the black hole was real, and now he suddenly, oh, it's not. Is it maybe on Fakeologist where I saw that?
Huh, I did not know there was the firewall paradox on black holes. So I'll have to research that. I didn't know. I'll get back to you on the firewall paradox. This is why black holes can't exist. I'm going to write that note. Note to self. It's funny. My husband and I, we watch The Big Bang Theory.
Mm-hmm.
Because he likes it, and there's nothing else on TV. So we said, they have Stephen Hawking on there quite a few times.
Really?
Yeah. A couple times just his voice. Of course, you know, it's like, do you get in trouble if you pretend you're Stephen Hawking and do a computer voice? I don't know. I think someone asked, what was in the media was that they asked him if he wants to update his voice, and he goes, no, I like my voice. So it's not going to change. And then a couple times he was in his wheelchair in the studio. I thought that was really weird.
I wish I could find that. I don't know why it's not coming up.
Oh, my kitty wants inside. I'll be right back.
Yeah. Here we go. Stephen Hawking, Miles Mathis, Stephen Hawking. I'm going on mute for a moment.
Hey, Sammy.
Hello.
Hello. I sent you the link to that Stephen Hawking thing. You can read it later. It's not very long. It's worth reading.
Okay.
He just analyzes some pictures and makes the case that it's not the same person. He certainly has outlasted and outlived the disease by so many years. Most people die within 5 years. He's had it forever. I mean, the fact that he's...
Oh, forever.
The fact that he's still alive is a miracle.
I don't know.
Did you hear about...
Did you think he looked different?
His hair changes, and his face kind of becomes smaller.
Well, he's got his mouth open in one and closed in another. Nose looks kind of the same to me.
Yeah.
And I'm going to pull out my ear detecting kit I got from Dallas Goldbug. Hold on just a sec. Let me pull it out and do my measurements. It's definitely the same ear. Oh, the one at the bottom.
The teeth.
Wow.
The teeth is, I don't know. But you got to read it, so.
It's just. All right. I'll
yeah,
go through,
go through it.
It.
It's only. It's not that long. There was another story written recently. Where was that? Let's see. There was this student who killed his teacher in Spain with a crossbow. Did you hear about that?
Holy cow. No.
The suspect...
Now I gotta worry about crossbows?
The suspect, reportedly a 13-year-old boy, has been arrested, but may not face charges because of his age. The teacher killed was protecting a colleague during the incident. 4 other people were wounded. Police have not confirmed the weapon was used, and there is no indication of his motive. The boy was said to have arrived late for class on Monday morning and wounded a Spanish language teacher and her daughter, who was also a student.
On purpose, did they say?
Yeah.
Or did he bring it for show and tell and it was accidental?
No, but if you look at the pictures... And the mayor tweeted something about it. And the students at the school said the crossbow had been fashioned out of wood and ballpoint pens, that the boy had thrown it into a rubbish bin before running off. And according to Spanish media, the pupil had spoken of killing all of his teachers last week and had a list of 25 names, but his schoolmates had dismissed his comments as a joke. And it's like BBC News, you know, so it's like... But if you look at the pictures, they're kind of the same format.
So a ballpoint pen killed her? Is that what we're saying?
I didn't know that was possible.
You better watch your back. And then, then there was the whole Nigerian Muslims murdering 12 Christians. Did you hear about that one?
Yeah.
There's a lot of psyops in the last, like, The picture of his hand. Oh, it's so stupid. Did you see that?
No.
You gotta see it. It's so great. Hold on.
This is crazy.
Look at this picture.
Is that the person drowning?
I feel like they must have just used a stock photo. I don't know if they're actually claiming that that's a picture from the event. I don't think it is.
Well, they gotta have some visual, I guess. So that's it.
They had this guy. I mean, they're not actually
group
saying that that's his hand, are they?
I know. No, I don't. Just a picture. There's no caption. 15 people threw 12 people overboard? So you each get one, but then this guy's big, so he needs two people.
Let's see that. Let's see something here.
They just love to ferment.
How do you do... Oh, why is that not working? Okay, here we go.
A fight broke out over religion, is reported, with a group of Muslim passengers threatening the Nigerians and Ghanaians after the Ghanaians, who were the minority, declared themselves Christian. Oh, and then, you know what happened? They threw them overboard. All 12 of them.
Mm-hmm. They sure did.
Because why? Because Muslims are supposed to hate Christians? But I would like the listener to know that Muslims call Christians people of the book. They call them people of the book. Because Christians are mentioned in the Quran, so Muslims are told to be nice to Christians. Just letting people know that. I don't know if you know that, Sammy.
Sure. Here we go. Let's see.
I thought I would make it obvious. Though. Hey, on some good news, you want to hear a quote from Jamie Foxx on Chris Brown?
Sure.
Jamie Foxx says, I've known him since he was 15. He danced with my sister who had Down syndrome. Did you know that? What?
That's weird.
It is weird, right? All right, crossbow. Crossboy.
Just some more pictures.
Barcelona. It's like ours, PSYOP Pictures, where you get everyone's face perfectly. They're all checking their phone, hugging, making sure they face in the camera.
Mm-hmm. They're never gonna like you'll rarely see like bright colors. It's all neutral colors. You know, as far as everybody's clothing, it's always very neutral colors. There's no like bright red shirt.
That's me.
Do Transitions Extra Active Lenses protect against harsh artificial light?
I pressed stop. Mute. Mute. Wow, I gotta... It wouldn't stop playing the ad. I gotta get ad blocker.
You know, it's funny. When I was involved in that Facebook discussion... hold on 1 second.
Okay. By the way, they never show the crossbow of that student that got thrown in the garbage. We need to see the crossbow. Where was... What name can we Google? Suspect, 13 years old. He made his own crossbow. Killed the teacher with a pen. Not a pencil. Pen. Was it blue or black ink? Does it say? A police spokesman could not confirm whether he had been fatally wounded by the boy's knife or makeshift bow. Oh, he had a knife, too. Wow, he was in all sorts of trouble.
So, this person I interacted with earlier... claims that she has a friend or a coworker who was there at the Boston bombing, and she injured her eye, and she just came back to work like a week ago, and she's now, you know, ground working some other management position.
In his work?
Yeah, so I asked her...
So could we look that up, I guess?
Yes, so I said, okay, what's her name? And then suddenly it was like, oh, well, I'm not going to give you her name. I said, well, if I'm wrong about this, I would like to know. So if someone really did get hurt and injured and I'm wrong about this, you know, I would like the opportunity to stand corrected. And apologize to somebody who really did get injured. You know, if I'm wrong, I would like to take the responsibility and at least say, hey, you know, I apologize. I didn't, you know, I thought it was, I didn't think anybody got injured. So is the person's name in the public domain? Like, is it somebody that I can talk to and ask questions to? And then it's just like, well, I'll ask her, but I'm not going to give her name if she doesn't want to, you know. It's like, okay, well, everyone has a cousin and a brother and a friend and a coworker that was there when all these things happened, and all these people witness, you know, rovers landing on Mars.
I don't know if anyone lost an eye at the Boston bombing. I don't think so.
First I've heard of it.
Yeah, I'm Googling it. Boston bombing, lost eye, and I put Colorado, right, because she's in your state?
She's not, actually.
Oh, what state?
I think it's in Pennsylvania. I'm not sure.
Let's look.
And then I said, well, has she signed up for the One Fund? The Boston One Fund? Because if not, you know, there's some money waiting for her. I mean, they raised $61 million. She should be fine. Shouldn't she have gotten some of that money? If she's one of the victims.
Right.
Then why won't you say her name, you know? Then you're just telling stories. In other words, you're maybe full of shit.
All right, I see a Boston bombing update. Richard family. A kid lost a leg. And then someone lost an eye. I got to control F. I. As the rest of the family, Bill and Denise were discharged from Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center a week after they were admitted. While no sight has returned to Denise's injured eye, her doctors have been pleased with how she's healing from her surgeries. Is that her? Little girl? Is that Denise?
No.
Because if it is, she's 10.
No.
Yeah. Okay, Bill and Denise of Dorchester, Massachusetts. So Denise is a mother of, so she's in her 30s maybe. She's a mother of a 7, an 8, and an 11-year-old. Why don't they give her name? Denise Richard of Dorchester. And search. So, yeah, she's in Massachusetts, but. And her name's Denise. She's not 10. She's a woman with 3 kids.
They're both runners, it says. Whatever.
Why weren't they running then?
It's so weird.
Oh, I remember her. Their son died. Yeah, this is the one where the kid died. But nobody else. And the kid that died looks exactly like the older brother, but younger.
Mm-hmm.
They even have the same hair tweak, the same slanty, you know, eyes that go down, kind of slant down. They talked about her eye, but. Yeah. It's a brother. All right, I didn't know. That's too bad, but here's where you look for bad Photoshop. And when they stick these pictures together. Now that looks like different people altogether. Well, it's interesting.
Yeah, it's just funny when people say that they knew someone.
So there's one person that lost their eye in the Boston bombing. Do you think this is the friend?
I think it's just all BS.
Your friend is talking about?
No.
I mean, I've known people lie to make a point.
Yeah. I'm even open to the idea that there are real people who are involved in these events in some capacity or another, and that someone actually does know them. Like, hey, I went to high school with that guy. But that, so maybe that person that says that is not lying. Maybe they really do know someone that went. They went to high school with them, or they used to work with them, but they don't know if that person is telling the truth or could be involved in some military operation or something.
That makes sense.
But every time that I've encountered someone, I always ask for their person's name. What's the person's name? You know, and then suddenly the story changes. Oh, well, I can't give you the name. You know, I'm not going to tell. I respect a person's privacy.
There's no privacy. All the Boston bombing victims are listed anyway. Aren't they? Are there any victims they didn't list?
I don't know, but I had two different people today telling me that they knew someone somehow involved or friends of a friend who were there in Boston. You know, that I'm a fool for thinking otherwise, but it's like, no, how deep does your critical thinking go? Even if you do know somebody, what does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. Even if you saw it with your own eyes, that doesn't mean anything. If I saw it with my own eyes, even I would say, okay, what am I?
Right.
Am I actually viewing a real bombing, or is it possible that this is just street theater or something else? Because I feel like there's definitely an element of making people believe things because they see it with their own eyes. If you're a mathematician or a NASA engineer sitting at a computer and you see a blip on the computer, you're going to believe it. You see it. You're experiencing it in real time with your own eyes and your own senses. No, I saw it. It was all there on the computer. We watched it go down.
Mm-hmm.
Would you ever stop and say, you know, I'm questioning what I'm seeing on the computer screen?
Yeah.
Night, Vidir. I think she's going to bed.
Good night.
But you know, I was listening to Fetzer on 9/11 today. I thought, you know, just let's see what he's saying about things. And he'll agree to it with anybody about anything is the problem. You think he has one idea, but he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
But his guest was saying, I saw the second building collapse live on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I was under the impression it wasn't played live. It was all recordings. No one saw the buildings collapse live. Isn't that the truth? Isn't that what happened?
No, I think they did collapse live.
As everyone was watching?
It was the impacts that were shown later.
Oh, the impacts. Okay. That's right. The impacts. But he used the word live. I saw them live on TV. You have to say live. Live is a psyop in itself. Just because it says live don't mean it is live.
Right. Well, what does that mean? They just put the word live on the screen?
And it's happening right now.
Yeah, I remember talking to my dad about it years ago. He said, no, Sammy, you know, I listened to Osama bin Laden live, or I heard him say with his own words that he was responsible. I was like, that didn't happen. Even if it did, so what?
He didn't, though.
He didn't.
One time I researched every video he ever made. He never said I was responsible. And
no.
He never said I did it.
He never did. And
that's,
even if he did,
that's
so what?
The,
it's just
the funny thing.
Screen.
I mean, that's the psyop for people who get into it, right? That's the rabbit hole. Hey, now, remember, don't let Osama bin Laden ever say he did it. Because there'll be some people out there going, see, he never said he did it.
Yeah, and then,
my point
somehow,
is it's part of the script. Yeah.
Sure, but somehow my dad thought that because he could understand Arabic and he heard him say something in Arabic on TV that it must have been real. Because, no, I heard him. I heard him in Arabic.
Well, he could have said it in Arabic. I didn't listen to all the Arabic ones. I only listened to the English. But, you know, I doubt it, though, right?
I doubt it, too. But even if he did say it in Arabic, what does that mean? That doesn't mean anything.
It's
what, he's
no,
he's
it's just like
truth?
You said, noise.
Yeah.
I was like kind of shocked that was his reasoning behind why he believed the whole thing, because he saw Osama bin Laden say something on TV. In other words, if it was a big conspiracy, it would be a conspiracy against Osama bin Laden, and he would never have admitted to it. Rather than understand that he's just part of the whole operation, he's part of the whole scam.
Yeah, they could have done all his videos in like a week, and then said, "Thanks, we don't need you ever again."
Right, and I think that people, I find generally that people tend to have this belief that there's no way our government and military could fake something because we have other independent sources that verify that we went to the moon, for example, and they're in India and they're in Russia and they're these other countries, so they would blow the whistle on us. People generally tend to believe that all these countries are independent of each other and it's not all under the same umbrella.
Do you think China had to get permission from the U.S. before they did their fake moon thing?
I don't know if permission's the right word. I think it's just all the same operation. They're all working in the same ways. You know, it's like, okay, now it's your turn, China. This will help give credibility on the world stage because people think that we're in competition with each other. I mean, maybe it was...
So the Chinese video with the bubble, right?
Right.
I'm thinking the bubble was placed there.
No.
On purpose.
I don't think so.
No?
No, because they could just explain it away.
The Chinese are that bad?
Well, I mean... I think that... Because there's bubbles in American videos, too. NASA videos. I think they can just say, oh, don't worry, you know, we'll explain it away as... No one will even say anything. And then if they do, we'll just say it's space ice or something. You know, they'll just come up with some term. Mm-hmm.
They're so funny. If you keep track of the NASA reports, they're like, astronaut almost drowns. What? Astronaut up at the ISS almost drowns in his spacesuit. How do you drown in his spacesuit?
Oh, yeah, he sprung like a water leak.
Condenser leaked inside. Yeah, and it just, I'm like, what? How much water is in there that it would pour out into his helmet? I don't know. It's so funny. I mean, the whole thing doesn't make sense if they're making that press release.
It almost makes you wonder, are they making up this story just to... make people believe there's more water around or that they're having these close calls or maybe to explain away why you might see a bubble.
Right? It could have been that water bubble that leaked, remember, Harold?
Mm-hmm. And how does that water... stay cool, stay the right temperature.
And you always forget that PSYOPs have intended audiences. I think we can learn a lot if we try and figure out who the audience is and kind of put ourselves in their shoes. I think make a lot more sense that way.
I think there's multiple audiences.
But I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all kind of PSYOP.
No, but it's like any...
Or, you know.
It's like if you watch The Simpsons, you know, there's one audience, which is like children. It's just this, you know, meaningless cartoon on the TV. And then there's the adult audience. And sometimes they'll say a joke, and that joke will have... It would almost be two jokes in one. One for the majority of the audience, targeted audience, the masses, and then there might be another joke like laid in there for more of an intellectual joke, or something that's kind of a secret.
Yes, you're right. You're absolutely right. My kids and I, we would laugh at different parts of the dialogue.
Yeah, like if you watch.
It's really weird.
Do you ever watch Seinfeld?
Yes. Yeah, we do.
Have you ever seen the last episode of Seinfeld?
Where they all get arrested?
Yeah, they have to go to court and defend their position. Like, it's like all the characters from all the seasons, the soup Nazi and all, you know, they all show up and like give their testimony in court about how terrible these four people are. I think it started with them. Maybe they were like in the airplane and they were going to crash, and you know, it ended up, they all ended up in jail. Do you remember that?
Right. Wasn't it because they wouldn't help a bystander?
It was the combination of all the bad things they did in the past.
Ah, right. They're all coming back.
Yeah, they were all like on trial at the end and in the courtroom and stuff, and it was all these people from the past episodes and all the prior seasons that came out to tell the story about how they did this awful thing. And it was always a misunderstanding, you know, and they turned. But anyways, the point of that is that it was really brilliant the way they wrote that ending, because they wrote it for different audiences, and one of the audiences, you know, there's all just the normal jokes in there for the majority of the public that's watching it. But then there's this whole other set of jokes for like Jewish people, because it was kind of like the story was kind of like the plight of Jewish people in society, and it was kind of a comedic narrative of that religion as told by comedians of the same religion. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So in the same way that, you know, a black comedian, a black audience might identify with a black comedian and their jokes in a certain way, with a certain cultural understanding, you know, you might see a person of another culture in the audience still laughing at the joke, but they're not laughing in the same way that the other person is, because the other person understands sort of the cultural aspect of the joke. So there's almost like the joke has several layers in it. It's the same kind of principle.
So there's Jew jokes hidden inside Seinfeld, you're saying?
Not necessarily jokes themselves. There's a whole commentary.
I'm just being weird.
But you know what I'm saying, really. Right? Like, there's a whole commentary of a story that's being told in, you know, in relation with a certain subset of the population.
Wow, I didn't know that. The writer of Seinfeld, what's his name? He's so funny. He had
Larry
a show
David?
On HBO.
Larry David.
Curb Your Enthusiasm. Yeah, have you ever watched that?
Yes.
Curb Your Enthusiasm. Funny. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was, he went where Seinfeld stopped, he continued and went overboard.
Right.
It was good. I mean, he makes, but it's a lot more Jewish, which is funny that you said that. You know, it's like what he wanted to do anyway. You know, they do the whole Jewish thing. And that's fine. It's like, you know, I feel like you're getting some sort of insight that I didn't have before.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. It's brilliant.
The social family network I didn't realize before, but, wow. Well,
yeah, no, there's nothing wrong. You know, there's nothing, I don't think there's anything wrong with it per se. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just a way to tell a story. And in Seinfeld, I think it was a little.
But it's a metaphor, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
It's a metaphor for what they're doing. For the psyops today, like, each part you're trying to say is built they make sure the whole, every part of the audience is going to gain, see something in it.
They want right, to exactly. See. Exactly. You know, so the you know, in the finale for Seinfeld, the non-Jewish viewer who maybe can't identify with some of the things in that culture, they're seeing and understanding a whole set of jokes that's, the laugh is slightly different, you know?
Wow. Kidding, I gotta pay more attention to my TV shows. But, so in the end, right, Larry David was used, like any other writer, to tell the story and put things in it you have to put in it.
Well, I mean,
like, have you ever watched, like, don't you think?
Go ahead.
And then maybe HBO was his, I'm going to finally get creative now and do what I want to do. But still within the bounds of the
I see.
Rules.
Yeah, there was, let's see if I can find it here.
Don't you think they led the way in product placement or what advertising? Look how many products they advertised on Seinfeld. Picking up things and drinking them from the TV, grabbing cereal boxes, Raisin Bran, and eating them. I bet they made a ton of money that way.
Sure.
Anyway, I interrupted you. You were going to say something.
No, I was just looking for something.
Okay.
Kind of like a rundown analysis of the metaphors in that finale, in that final episode, what the metaphors meant as far as them being on trial and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you rewatch it, you'll probably like get an idea.
Really, folks out there, curb your enthusiasm. It's really funny. He talks about the most
hilarious,
embarrassing, weird human situations, and he's always the loser. And he's like, "What?" And sometimes, a lot of times, it's nothing he did. He keeps losing it. And then he's like, "Oh,
yeah."
Well.
He's just like, Yeah, he's really funny.
Or he's well-intentioned. You don't hate this character at all. You know, he's trying to do good. It's just, it never works. Hey, kitty. Do you have any pets, Sammy?
I had a cat, but he passed away last year.
Oh, I'm sorry. Shuismu.
Yeah. Jordan.
Oh, you named him Jordan.
Yeah, well, that's what
did
I
you call him El Urdan around the house? Oh, you brought him here from Jordan?
Funny. I sure did. It was my buddy.
How'd you really? Your parents did that for you?
No, I did it myself.
Wow. So you got a cat carrier?
Uh-huh.
Right? Wow. Yep. How long did he have to be in, what do you call that?
Well,
isolation.
The first half of the flight, he was in cargo, and that was probably like 17 hours. And then he rode up in the plane for the second half of the flight, which was probably like 6 hours.
Oh, they let him move up? Did you ask him?
Yeah, it was a whole thing, but they basically kept
you're
him
like,
up in
it's
the front.
My cat, you don't understand. He's special, he's the one. You gotta let him up here. Mm-hmm. Oh, Sammy's heart was breaking for his kitty. That is so sweet.
Yeah.
Well, I can't believe the cat let you touch it, because I've had so many feral kittens. My God, one day old, they'll slash your finger off if you get near them. I don't know how they do it.
I had a feeling he was a house cat that escaped from his owners and ended up with me.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Did you hear that Max's 9/11 clip fest thing?
Yeah, I did.
There was a couple of... I think he said he knew someone that was in the building.
Oh, yeah, I had gotten irritated about something he said. What was it? Did I write it down? I was like, oh, yeah, let's check that out. Like, I wanted to, felt he had to be called on something.
Yeah, he
was
said
making
something
extraordinary
about,
claims about 9/11.
I knew people who were down there, or I knew someone who was in the building. Everyone knows someone.
Something like, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know what? I think the building, no one had been there since 1993. Completely empty.
That's what I think, where they had just virtual
completely
offices.
Gutted.
You know, I think it had
yeah,
some companies
exactly.
with virtual offices and, oh yeah, we have an office in the World Trade Center and everybody thinks that they have these colleagues that are over there in that building.
Right, just get a long window, backdrop, you're good to go. They probably sell those.
Yeah, and then if you work for the same bank in another building, you're going to think, yeah, we had offices in that building.
And you're like, hey, let's meet you upstairs for lunch. I'll come up from my office, meet me at that restaurant up there at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have you been up there on the Twin Towers?
No. I went to Ground Zero in March of 2002, but
you
couldn't really
did.
Get near it. Yeah, but you couldn't really get near it.
They had, like, construction fencing up. I think the whole thing was gutted. There, how many toilets did people see in the debris pile? There should have been thousands of toilets alone. Yeah, toilets unmistakable.
Yeah.
That curved ceramic white glistening bowl.
They all turned into pulverized dust. That was another thing that he said. He said something about like the Judy Wood. The magical weapons dustify.
You know, I think it's Veronage. Have you seen that video? I think mm-hmm. It could have been. I mean, I need more. I'm currently considering doing some calculations because if it's Veronage.
What's Veronage?
Do you know what that is?
No.
Explosiveless demolition.
Hmm.
If you look that up. So it's not explosive. So they go about 6-7 floors down, and they take 2 floors out. Chris Kendall was the one who told me about this from hoaxbusters.blogspot.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have these hydraulic jacks that pop all at the same time, the support beams on 2 floors, and then the middle floor just slides right out, and that... It's actual, I hate to say it, because I've been against pancaking my whole life. But once you see the video, the damn thing's pancaking.
Mm.
It's the strangest thing I've ever seen. Are you watching the video?
Which video?
Do explosiveless demolition.
On
or just
YouTube?
Veronage, Veronage, yeah. And so they do it in France. It's a French word, Veronage.
V-E-R-I-N-A.
I don't know what it means. G-E. This could explain how they brought down the Twin Towers.
Yeah, but then
it's
you're
like
going back,
reverse psychology.
Interesting.
It's like they say, pancaking. Oh, it's obvious pancaking, and so we're going to go, no, it's not, dumbass. When in, actually it is, maybe. Because Baronage proves it can be done. So but what then, I'm doing, I was looking at the, what?
But then you got to
okay,
go
throw
back
it at me. Let me see if
the
I can.
The video is real.
Oh, there's a ton of them. It's a company
no,
in France
the World
that does
Trade
it.
Center. I mean, World Trade Center.
Oh, yeah. No, that's video's fake. Yeah. I have no faith in any video evidence whatsoever. All we knew was the building was there one day and it wasn't the next.
Right. Whoa, that's so interesting.
It pancakes, right, when you watch it? But you need about 6 floors at least to have enough weight. So what I'm thinking is I-beam, right? These buildings, their infrastructure is really just I-beams all welded together. So what is the tensile strength or the maximum force that an I-beam can take before it completely, it's not a crush the word, it actually breaks. You know, steel is pretty brittle if hit with enough force. So before it cracks and breaks. Well, if 6 floors coming down at free fall speed is enough, well, then there you go. It's just breaking the steel, and each support beam gets broken in the same manner all the way down.
Yeah, this one is really interesting. The people are so close at one minute, 45 seconds. That could explain the squibs, yeah.
And you know, right, in the squib, of course, that was drawn in, whatever, to the video footage
more likely
of that day.
Than not,
doesn't
more
represent
likely than
reality.
Not, the video is fake, for sure.
Right, but it's good to take you off track there, put those squibs in, so you don't think, if there were no squibs, then people would, see, what would they say? They had to put the squibs, then you would consider Veronage.
I mean, like a lot of people are saying, you know, and they bring up a good point, but I've been, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, the reason why they believe the Judy Wood theory is because if it was controlled demolition, there would be, the rubble would be, you know, too big, it would just go everywhere, it would be everywhere for miles. And that there was no rubble, and it was all just gone, and it was all just dustified.
Well, look at these buildings. Look at 37 seconds. That's pretty damn dustified right there. And if you consider that the Trade Center's basements were filled up, probably,
but
as this thing continued
also,
underground.
It was also way taller, though. They're saying, like, well, they're basically...
Right.
I mean, what the argument is that, you know, I mean, I think there's holes in the argument, but what the argument is no, because the rubble would be so great, there would just be so much rubble. But I'm thinking,
here's,
like, where would the steel beams go, you know? But what I'm thinking is, I mean, for me, I'm thinking, if you emptied out the buildings and there was no furniture in there, you know what I mean? They were really empty. Then the rubble would not
right,
be...
Right, no toilets, no carpet.
The rubble wouldn't be so much
right,
at that
no
point.
Sinks.
Yeah.
Right. No then floors.
It's just the shell of
oh,
itself.
You know, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that building pretty
and
much
And anyway, Sammy, we have no... Can we trust any picture of the rubble pile at all?
No.
So, really, we don't know what the hell that rubble pile looked like.
No, and no one...
And before the army finished up... Right, before any of those people saw it, you know they got those barriers already up. No one could get down there anyway for a long time. And you know what I bet? All those apartment buildings that faced it, so easy to buy them out. Just buy them out.
And they could also...
What people were there to...
They, well, but no, there's big buildings around. You can't just get down in there. But there's also,
right.
You know, there's also the underneath. There's the garage and the underneath the building, which would have filled up, you know, a decent amount of rubble. So that the pile doesn't necessarily have to be as high as you imagine.
But if you notice the this video, the Varinage compilation at 39 seconds, it's dustified.
Right.
The concrete is not in blocks. It's in a powdery heap of gravel and powder and sand and chunks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what better to break concrete up except blunt force trauma? Just
that's
snap
so weird.
It. It's like a huge press, you know, as it's just popping it as it's coming down.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, the reason nobody has even thought of this yet is because we've been taken so far away from these ideas by like Judy Wood and her theory and mini nukes and all that directed energy shit. I heard someone today, I was listening to Fetzer again, and the guy goes, it definitely came from with outside the building. Definitely. Oh, he kept like, every point he made was the opposite of the truth. So I'm like, I think there's a formula here somewhere.
Mm-hmm. It's funny that all these people come to watch these buildings get demolished and... I mean, you see how close these people are at a minute 50 seconds to watching this building.
Oh, let me go. 1 minute 50? Do you see they have water they're spraying on it constantly? So that makes sense. You know, all the friction that could build up or the heat from all that potential energy being converted into kinetic energy.
I mean, look how close these people are. It's kind of surprising to me that they wouldn't have them stand back any further. Like, go to minute 40.
Do they get covered in dust? Didn't even look like...
No, not really.
Well, it's hard to tell how close they are. Well, they cut it before we see.
But then you'll see it again. You'll see the next...
Look at that. Oh, wow.
So if they're that close...
And you know, what if... Right.
Then in New York, you know...
Look how those two... Oh, right, see? They know where it's going to go. It's guaranteed.
Yeah, so it does pretty much fall neatly into a little pile. Now, granted, it's a much smaller building, but same principles would apply.
Mm-hmm. Well, some of them are what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Like 20-story building?
Mm-hmm.
That's significant, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's still a tenth of the size. But the shape of the building is the same. It's a tower.
So if this was done in New York, then they'd have the water sprayers and... This one, there's one where they just have these bulldozers just pulling it, pulling the floor joists out. They didn't even use hydraulic jacks.
And then the whole thing just comes down. That looks a lot more like what we see in the video than normal controlled demolition.
That's the weird thing I thought, too. I'm so glad you said that. I thought the exact same thing. And I was uncomfortable that it looked the same or similar.
But then again, yeah, there's no reason to believe with the video, the images.
Yeah. It's That's weird, though. Maybe that's teasing us.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I'll even consider, like, oh, maybe they want us to think it's all fake video, but some of it's real. But then that way it'll lead us astray because we're so used to not accepting things as real. Because why should we?
Right.
So every now and then I'll question my own question, you know, the fakery itself, like, oh, am I being too quick to assume that it's all CGI?
Yep.
And then by doing so, I might be missing something? I don't know. I mean,
I wonder if any French architects helped design the Twin Towers, like on the team.
Why?
Maybe they're the ones that brought in the Varnage technique so that it was already planned on what floors would be blown or used to, you know, make the thing happen. They had to be identified ahead of time, I would think.
Yeah, but
if there's a red button, it was already set up.
Well, the funny thing is too is when people say, you know, I think I heard Fetzer or somebody, who was it, where they were saying, they were saying that. That we know the WTC building was controlled demolition, but then they just completely gloss over the fact, like the additional question, which is, well, wait a minute, if you admit that that's true, that it WTC was controlled demolition, WTC 7, then don't we have to stop and talk about the conversation of how did they do that? Because that would have taken months of planning or weeks of planning.
Isn't that the funny part of that?
You can't just say, oh, yeah,
it's
we know
so
that
true,
was controlled
it's like
demolition.
We got to stop. Yeah, you can't stop there. You got, now it's all blown open. That's it, baby. You just opened the can of worms. You can't go back. That's it. Means the rest of it's suspect. Now let's, but they don't. Even that obvious thing, people stop there. I don't know.
Yeah, or they'll
yeah,
say,
I hear
they'll,
how many people
they'll say,
stop.
They'll say that the World Trade Center was, the Building 7 was controlled demolition, but then they won't acknowledge any of the other fakery or the planes, you know, themselves. And they won't even mention that if it was controlled demolition, it would have had to have been planned way in advance. And if it was planned way in advance, then they could have planned all this other stuff way in advance.
They can't do that. They can't make it from there to there. It's too difficult a journey.
Yeah, and then
you're just going to ruin their day with that kind of logic.
Yeah. I feel like there's just no logic in people's thinking these days at all.
No, it's just too emotional. They can't be logical. I feel bad for people, though, being subject, you know, to this.
I remember a friend of mine say, I was talking to a friend of mine about the predictive programming, examples of predictive programming. And there's that one, like, The Simpsons, where it's like from the 90s, the early 90s, it was this episode of The Simpsons where they had a picture in the background of the scene of an airplane hitting this Twin Towers. And then there was another picture of, like, the Zeppelin, you know, the Zeppelin on fire or whatever. So that second picture of the Zeppelin gave context to what the first picture was. It was just these, you know, aviation disaster events.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very clearly, have you seen this? Let's see if I can find a picture of it. Like, there's the one where, you know, she holds up the magazine and says New York, $9, and then the two Twin Towers in the back, so it looks like 9/11. You seen that? There.
Hmm.
Here we go.
I think so. I've seen most of them.
So I'm sure you've seen this one.
There we go. Oh, yeah, that is where he's going to the city, wants to go to New York. It's too obvious. And then it's too obvious.
And then there's Marge versus the Monorail, that episode from the night, or like 1993. Marge versus the Monorail. There we go. This is from 1993 episode. Here, I'll send it to you. So you can see like the smoke, like the smoky building in the background, and on the scene before it, there was a picture of the Zeppelin, which gives context, you know, to this picture. And I mean, it's very obvious what that is, you know what I mean? It's not just... And you can see, if you look closer, if you get like a larger version of this, you can see like that little white thing on the right.
Right, what other...
It's an airplane.
Oh, wow.
Anyways, I used this. This was just one of several examples I was showing to a friend of mine to explain the phenomenon of how things are kind of... predictive, you know, the predictive programming and how it's how it's used in a psychological way, whether it's to prepare us or whatever, you know, just, and it's within pop culture media and stuff. In this case, it's The Simpsons. And the reaction of my friend was like, oh no, it could be anything, it's just a coincidence.
Just a coincidence. That's a pretty big coincidence of all the, you know, a bus ticket in this one where he's holding up the magazine that says $9 for the bus ticket, and then the Twin Towers makes the 11. So why $9? Why not 10? Why not 5, 4, 3? Why put any dollars on it at all? I mean, why put any numbers? So...
Yeah, and then what about all the other examples?
Seems like a pretty big coincidence. Yeah.
Like the... In The Matrix, his passport, he's born on September 11,
2001. Yeah. Yeah, what's that about? I remember that. I was like, what are they doing? Exactly that same day.
The Family Guy went too. The Boston. Ooh, you know what's really good? Have you ever seen the Back to the Future conspiracy?
Oh yeah, we're
Illuminati.
There's several different places in it. I'm not.
No, it's the.
There's. Yeah.
Illuminati symbolism in Back to the Future. It's really good. You should watch it. I'll send you the link.
Oh, I don't know if I saw that one. I just saw the one, all the places there's 9/11 references.
And there's this other one.
Future Illuminati. Oh, it's by Truth Media Revolution. But it's true.
Let me see if this is the thing I was looking for.
Freedom Tower is 1. The Twin Towers was 2. Lone Pine Mall first had 2 trees, then it had 1.
That's not.
Yeah, it was weird. So if we had to pick the best evidence to show, if we had time to get it, of foreshadowing in media, what would that, one of the top 10 be? What do you think?
Well, you mean just 9/11 or in general?
Let's open it up in general.
Well, I think that you had some of these early science fiction writers, like Arthur C. Clarke, who came up with these ideas like satellites before they came up with them in real life, quote unquote. The concept of, like, you know, Kubrick in 2001 and how he envisioned that if you were in space, you would move slowly, and then that's actually what really happened.
Yeah, they got it right, those science fiction writers, amazingly.
I know, right?
On almost every count, yeah.
I mean, I think
pretty lucky there, huh?
If you look at some of the early fictional dinosaur stories, you know, you'll see some things that eventually turned out to be what they really found in real science.
Yeah.
Or even.
But you know what? We haven't got
space
station. With the centrifugal, you know, anti-gravity, centrifugal spinning force idea. They're still trying to make that work, by the way. It's all bullshit, but they're trying to, because they're tired of floating them fake astronauts.
Yeah, I think
how easy it would be if they could invent anti-grav. They can just walk around the space station like normal, be in their kitchen.
I think I mentioned to you last time about the movie Gravity. And how they made it appear that this satellite that crashed into another satellite or whatever it was. Remember how it happened and then they had 90 minutes until it would come back around?
Yes.
So they made it appear as if space is so vast and that these satellites, even though there's 20 or 30,000 of them, that you wouldn't see them nearby because space is so vast that they're, you know, so tiny and so far away. But that's why you don't see them, you know? So it's almost like that portion of the movie was inserted into the narrative to explain the concept of why you don't see, you know, thousands of satellites next to the ISS. Because we don't have any video or pictures of the ISS with satellites nearby or off in the distance.
None. Yeah, none.
You know, so like they made it, you know, as soon as she started drifting away, or I guess towards the end when George Clooney's character started drifting away, that within a minute he was just a speck of nothingness and he was so far away that it's so vast that you don't see the satellites because there's just too much space out there.
Oh, because they're tiny.
Yeah. where people like us are asking questions, like, hey, how come we don't see any satellites anywhere near the ISS or within cameras, you know, range? Like, we just don't see them.
Because if you go... how much... They should see something, shouldn't they?
I mean, if you look at this...
I mean, just from glint alone...
If you look at the Google Earth,
you know, the ISS that you see in the night sky doesn't have any lights. It's all supposed to be reflected sunlight, by the way. Sorry, go ahead.
I sent you this link to the Google Earth view of satellites. You can see it on YouTube. Real-time positions of 13,000 satellites.
So, how high is the ISS?
460 kilometers, give or take.
So it's like 100 miles or so? 100-something miles?
I think its distance varies, I think.
250 miles,
mm-hmm.
400 kilometers. Okay. So let's go back to these satellites. At 400 kilometers, well, they're all over the place.
Yeah, now the ISS...
You should be able to look up and see something.
I mean, you should see them all over, everywhere.
Yeah, let's see. What is the lowest satellite? Lowest satellite. Nope. That's not how you spell it. Let's see. Saddle. So if we can find out how many feet high the lowest satellite is, right, we can tell if there's satellites under the ISS and over the ISS. That was the chance of seeing it.
The ISS is supposedly... You know, lower Earth orbit way below these satellites. But you can't even get a straight answer on how many satellites have been launched.
Right. Like the Wikipedia low Earth page. Orbit satellites. Yeah. Oh, they're at 100 miles. So the ISS at 250 is way above low Earth orbit satellites. That's what I read here.
Mm-hmm.
Is this wrong?
Well, on the Wikipedia page, which doesn't make any sense because its own information contradicts itself, it says about 6,600 satellites have been launched. The latest estimates are that 3,600 remain in orbit. Of those, about 1,000 are operational, and the rest have lived out their useful lives and are part of the space debris. Approximately 500 operational satellites are in low Earth orbit, 50 are in medium Earth orbit, which is 20,000 kilometers, and the rest are in geostationary orbit.
And these are satellites.
Yeah, that's right. 36,000 kilometers. So the lowest ones in low Earth orbit would be an altitude between 99 miles and 1,200 miles.
Okay. Right, so that's below the ISS at 250.
But they say that there's only 500 in low Earth orbit. 50 of them are in medium Earth orbit, which is 20,000 kilometers,
oh.
And the rest are in geostationary orbit.
500 total, huh?
In low Earth orbit, yeah.
That's not a lot. That's not a lot at all. It's nothing. Huh. Okay, how many are in the next layer? What's the next zone?
Medium Earth orbit, 50 of them. And then the rest, which would be 400...
What's that?
The rest, which would be 450, are in geostationary orbit at 36,000 kilometers.
Yeah, that's way out there. I think that's our ceiling, by the way. You know that? I think we can't go any farther than that. if we can get out. I'm thinking I don't know. I go back and forth. Like, if maybe the rules are different up there. Like, there is oxygen you can breathe and you do get lighter, but then you run out of oxygen and you can't move. You're done. You know, you can't function. So we've got, like, this barrier we can't get past. And there's even a couple articles I read on rocketry, like, the problem is they could only go so high in early rocketry because the higher they went, the harder they had to push because the least amount of molecules there, the air was to push against. So in the early days of rocketry, they didn't have any of these fancy theorems about, you know, Newton's laws, opposite and equal reaction garbage that everyone's using wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They have the actual, you know, they understand the physics of it. You have, because that doesn't help you understand the physics. But there was a formula. They knew if I went this high, I needed to have this much fuel. And if I go this high, I need to have not just double the fuel, but it grows exponentially. So they could never carry enough fuel to get up past a certain point. That's mm-hmm. the problem with rocketry. Then all of a sudden, guess what? Magic happens. Now they're into space.
Yeah, it's always some magical theory that you can't observe on Earth.
I think they said they got a new fuel. I was reading something. I don't know. Something like that. But
well, even just trying to find out how many satellites, even just trying to find out how many satellites are in orbit, you get different answers from different sort, you know, Wikipedia versus space.com versus Universe Today. They all say something different.
Hmm.
The Goddard Space
Could there be
Flight,
secret?
The Goddard Space Flight Center's lists 2,271 satellites currently in orbit, which is only spacecraft and not space debris. Russia has the most satellites in orbit with 1,324, followed by the United States with 658.
I'm on a mission, Sammy, and I encourage everyone out there to go on this same mission. Anytime you hear someone's working with satellites, ask them, do you work with satellites? No. Ask them how and what capacity do they work with satellites up in space. Because so far as I've got, it's just pressing a button on a console to connect to SatCom.
Right, which could...
closest I got of anyone who has...
which could just be, you know, some land-based technology that's bouncing off the ionosphere.
Right, it could be encrypted. Right? Maybe it's just the encrypted channel. It's a good way to hide it. You know? Because you got to step in all these special codes when you go to it. And, you know, it's a procedure, kind of. But still, you know, you just press a button to initiate it.
I mean, when I go up into the mountain... into the mountains, I lose reception at some point. You would think that if I'm going higher up, my satellite connection would be better. I'm no longer in the city.
Yes.
Why am I losing connection with the satellite when there's less interference?
Right. And you know, Sammy, my daughter... she works in the telecommunications industry in Seattle. Basically, they buy cell towers for cell phone companies. Cell phone companies do not use satellites. It's mm-hmm. 100% land-based. Everything is land-based. Because my daughter's in the industry. And she goes, no, there's no satellites. It's all this way and that's it. It's all, you know, antenna to antenna. In fact, there's a push now to put antennas on all the highways because people in their cars want reception when they're between cities. So there's no satellites there. So, and this is a big myth. You see it even in damn commercials. You see the person with the cell phone beam into a satellite
mm-hmm.
and beam into the AT&T store or whatever. I'm like, this is such bullshit. No, it's not in the industry. So I don't know they're promoting this myth themselves or what?
I mean, you know, when you're,
anyway,
when
I
you're
told
using
my daughter.
Maps, if you're using Google Maps on your phone, you're definitely quote unquote connected to a satellite.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I can use my navigator when I have no reception on anything else, but my navigator still. Isn't that weird?
Mm-hmm.
I don't get that.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you multiple times I've driven into the mountains, and at some point I lose my navigation. I lose all reception. So why can't satellite still locate me if I'm up in the mountains at a higher elevation with less noise around, less other, not competing
right.
with any other signals?
To that satellite that's telling you where to go. You're closer to it.
Yeah, it should be easier.
Yeah. Does not compute. It's a hoax.
I remember I called.
What?
I made a phone call one time. And I don't remember what the organization was, but it was something here in Colorado that was like an affiliate of NASA or something. And I said that I was trying to help my son with his science project, and we were trying to figure out exactly how many satellites were in space. And they couldn't give me an answer, and then they said, here, email this other office. And I emailed around, and I got
That's
nowhere.
That's really smart. You're funny. Of course. I'm going to use that next time. And did you email them?
I did. I sent several emails, and I made some phone calls. And I just always got passed on to someone else, and given the runaround and never really got an answer.
Meanwhile, your son's graduated from high school now. Thank you very much. I was going to say, didn't answer a dime.
Oh, you should see. I follow all the NASA pages on Facebook. So there's NASA 360, there's NASA Curiosity Rover, then there's just the NASA page, and then there's NASA International Space Station, and then there's Earth Observatory. There's all these different NASA pages on Facebook.
Oh, cool.
And they post every day, they're posting stuff. It's crazy. It's just non-stop propaganda. Every day there's a new video, a new story coming out about the Hubble telescope or slick graphics and CGI, and
really,
yeah, you should follow them on Facebook. It's so funny.
It's just a big PR firm, then. Really, they're their own.
And people's comment, people just love it. They never question it. It's Earth Day because Earth Day is Wednesday, so they posted that famous picture of the Earth from Apollo 17. The
oh,
one
they don't
picture
got any
that
new ones, huh?
Knew. Yeah, it's just
Shouldn't
so strange.
Shouldn't a geostationary satellite be able to take a picture of the Earth in
and
its entirety?
And shouldn't it see all the satellites below it? Because the geostationary ones
yeah.
are the highest.
Yeah, well, I don't get it. Yes, okay, now I'm mad. Now let's think about this. If the geostationary orbit satellite is really as far out as they say, like you said, it'll take a picture of every satellite below it, plus the entire Earth is in its view now because it's so far away.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that right?
You
okay, then, if these damn things were real, we'd have thousands of pictures of the Earth. Thousands. freaking thousands. Because these guys are just, you'd let them go and take pictures and send it back. Fit one of these bastards with the camera, there you go.
Some of the satellites are big, too. Like here, here's a picture. Global Operations Satellite System. I mean, these are huge satellites. There's Envisat, and NOAA has a satellite. Here's another link.
All right.
You know, these are, you can see that yellow line is geostationary orbit.
Wow. All right. So the Earth circumference is about, they have the geostationary.
Earth circumference is 25,000 miles, but you can see, like, India has one,
miles.
China has one, Korea has theirs, Japan.
And what is the height of a geostationary?
They say 36,000 kilometers.
So it's... Well, it says, yeah, there's two ones, but the tallest is 36. All right, so it's as the same... circumference. No, I want diameter of Earth. How could I be so foolish? Diameter. Oh, it's going to be
Earth
less.
Diameter's 6,000.
Okay, the diameter's... It's about, 7,918 miles. So we'll say 8,000 just for this quick calculation. So if the Earth diameter is 8,000 miles and the geostationary orbit is out... 36,000, right?
Kilometers. Kilometers. So that's, so the Earth diameter
22,000.
12. Earth diameter is 12,000 miles. 12,700 miles. Kilometers. Kilometers.
Kilometers. Okay, so 8,000 miles, its diameter, and it's, the geostationary orbit is 22,000 miles. Okay, so now we're in miles. Miles to miles. So if it's 8 to 22, it's at least 3 times its distance out, 1, 2, 3, right? Mm. And more,
right.
Maybe go 4 distances almost. So shouldn't it be able to take a picture of the whole thing?
It should, and it should
at
also...
At least a big swath of it.
And it should also capture... I mean, realistically, you should be able to capture the moon behind it.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. and all the satellites in orbit.
Hmm. Or at least something impeding the view of the Earth, right? If this thing is, it's a shadow on the Earth, right? If this thing's trying to look at the Earth, it can't, you know, this spot is great because there's a damn satellite in the view and it's not, you know, he's not seeing past it. It would be,
or
be a dot
the,
on the picture.
Or even just the lighting of the Earth, like how it's lit up from the sun.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be, I don't know, it wouldn't be lit up perfectly like it is in all of these images.
Yeah, you know what I'm thinking? We don't ever know what the Earth looks like. We've not gone up enough. I think it looks flat from outer space. Yeah, I think the oceans appear black. They don't appear blue. You know why? You want to hear my logic?
Well, if you go up in an airplane and you look down, you're not necessarily always going to see blue.
Right, not that either. But it's like when we're on Earth, we're saying the sky is blue because it reflects the ocean. Did you hear that? Some people say that.
Yeah, yeah.
Other people say it filters light, but I don't know. So if you're out in space then and you look at the Earth, it's just reflecting the blackness of space.
Should.
So it would have to appear as black. Yeah.
Yeah, so which puts into question
weird black green planet. Yeah, if we're a planet at all. Don't. Where are we, Sammy? Where are we?
Who knows? We'll never know.
No one can tell me.
But I will say that the concept of a spherical Earth just doesn't seem very plausible anymore.
Yeah, I'm stacking up my facts right now before I decide on a model. I think
I can't really decide on a model either because they all have problems with them.
Yeah. And there's a problem if you decide too early because then you discount other possible models. You've already chosen a model and you just want to support it now. So
before I choose
a model, just gonna look at the facts.
But the geocentric model makes more sense than heliocentric one does, to me at least. That doesn't mean it's right. It just means it's a little better than that other model. Because they're all just models.
Remind me again the difference between the two.
Well, geocentric means that everything revolves around the Earth, and heliocentric means everything revolves around the Sun.
From the Sun. All right. I think we're doing a little dance, probably. A little bit of both. And we're supposed to be moving in space, like a spiral through space as we turn and move in time.
Yeah, but that's just a silly theory. There's no evidence to support that.
Did they measure star distances? I thought that was their evidence.
Well, they say that the closest star is 25 million trillion miles away. But it's like
Alpha,
I said that last time
what
we
is
talked.
It?
I don't remember.
Alpha but, said but they thought like it I was mentioned. Alpha Centauri, which was 10. Alpha something. Anyway, go ahead.
Let's see, closest star to Earth. Alpha Centauri. 93 million miles away.
That was the
away.
Old one.
Well, the sun is 93 million miles away.
Oh, okay.
But,
I'll never forget it, because the Muppets did a musical about it, a music song.
That's the thing that we talked about last time, where you can say something is so far away, and you can make it seem like that's true by overstating the size of the object. Whereas if that object is much smaller, then suddenly there's no way it could be that far away. It has to be closer. So they say the sun is 400 times the size of the moon, and it just happens to be 400 times further away. But if the sun was the size of a basketball, then you would look up in the sky and you'd realize there's no way that thing is 93 million miles away. It's got to be just a couple hundred miles away if I can still see it and it's that small. In other words, you can make anything seem further away if your relationship to that object is in such a way that you think the object is much bigger than you, but it's really a lot smaller than that.
Mm-hmm. It'd be really easy to prove, don't you think, how far the sun is away?
No,
just do some trigonometry.
So. I mean,
if you see the clouds.
But your trigonometry.
You know, think of the sun rays.
Your trigonometry would be dependent on certain variables, so you would have to put in the size of the sun in order to determine how far away it was. So if you could say, okay, well, let's say the sun is 500 miles in diameter, then now I can calculate its distance. Well, but let's say it's only 100 miles in diameter. Now I can calculate a different distance. So without knowing the size, you would never know. So that's where the illusion comes in. Because somebody can say, look at these two objects. They look the exact same size, and yet one of them's close and the other one's way far away.
Huh. But I'm going to cheat, Sammy, how I do this. All right? I'm going to cheat a little bit. So you know on a... Sometimes there's like a partly sunny, partly cloudy day. And you have the sunbeams that kind of come down through the clouds. You've seen that?
Uh-huh.
Well, if you look at that, you can tell those lines aren't parallel. They're not parallel at all. They're actually like spreading out as they get closer to the earth. So I bet if I do some reverse trigonometry, you can tell where that light source is coming from.
Because they hit the
Earth at a right angle.
Because there's also light refraction, and I personally don't know how to calculate all of that. That it starts getting really confusing and complex when you take into account how light behaves. But remember the telescope thing that we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Aries failure?
Yes.
I'll put the link in the thing just so we can have it for this note, for the notes. So this was what I found really interesting was this experiment was done by this guy, Aries failure, where that takes into account the way the light behaves as it hits the telescope, and he filled the telescope with water, and then he drew all these conclusions, and then that experiment proved that the Earth wasn't moving, and so in order to explain away that one experiment, they came up with the law of, or the theory of relativity, the relativity fraud. I'll send you that YouTube video. So then, once you start understanding that these theories came after the fact, it's not like this theory of relativity just was something that was discovered. It was specifically in answer to an experiment that proved something. So none of these scientists are going out and doing their own experiments and showing, hey, look, the Earth rotates. Here's an experiment that we did to show that. That's not what's happening. What's happening is that somebody else, another scientist, is doing an experiment that shows that the Earth is not rotating, and then they're coming up with an invisible, magical explanation to explain away the experiment.
So, just to make sure I understand, the telescope using water saw light differently than the telescope using air?
Yeah, it has to do with the angle at which you tilt the telescope and whether the light from the star will reach the eyepiece as it travels through the telescope. In other words,
it looks like light moves slower in water. Isn't that what he's showing?
Right.
So why is that crazy? That sounds reasonable.
He explains it much better than I can explain it.
Okay.
It's basically the difference between the ether moving above the Earth and carrying light and how that would behave versus if the Earth was moving and the light entered the telescope and how that would behave. It's kind of a difficult thing to explain without, like, when with a diagram and the explanation, it's a little easier. The little animation, okay. You know?
Well, you know, I'm not alone. One of the comments on this video is, I lost 20 IQ points just listening to the first minute. I'm going to leave now before I turn Forrest Gump.
You have to watch it a couple times. Like, when I watched it once, I didn't quite understand it. You know what I mean? I had to watch it, like, three times, and then it kind of sunk in. I was like, okay, I get it now. But I still couldn't explain it to anyone without the use of a diagram.
Right. Here's another, someone said what I said, Andrea Toretta. She says, water slows down light speed? Really? OMG. I mean, that's basically what I was saying, but you said I didn't get it. I got to watch it a couple more times. It's like about angles and stuff.
Yeah, it's the relationship between how a light would enter the telescope if the ether was moving versus if the Earth was moving. And then the difference in the angle of what you would have to tilt the telescope with or without water in it. So one of the key things is that if you fill this water, if you fill the telescope with water and the Earth was moving, the light wouldn't reach the eyepiece at that angle.
All right. About angles or something, but you got to watch it three times.
Just watch it again at some point.
But, at least. Okay.
But
take notes?
You'll understand it. I mean, it's not difficult to understand. It is a little difficult to sort of try to explain it. It's nice that they have that little animation so that, you know, you can kind of see it while the explanation
cartoons.
Is...
Cartoons, good. Yeah, but we learn good with cartoons.
The idea being, this is the important point to take from all of this, is that the theory of relativity was created out of nothing in order to explain away this particular experiment. So that now it's like, oh no, we found out that light doesn't behave that way. So your experiment no longer proves what you think it proves. Because
okay,
we just
so
found
Airy
out.
Did this like in... No, go ahead. Then I'll ask in my next question.
In other words, we just found out that light travels at the speed of light independent of the speed that it's moving. In other words, that's the example that I gave is when we talked last time was, you know, if you're traveling through the universe at half of the speed of light and you turn on a flashlight or a lantern or some light source, will the speed of that light be affected by the speed that you're moving? And so they basically, theory of relativity said, no, actually it won't be affected. So therefore, this telescope experiment is wrong and it no longer holds any water. It doesn't prove what you think it proves, that the Earth is stationary. So that you're wrong. The Earth is actually still moving. And this theory of relativity is the reason why. But that theory of relativity is not really an experiment that somebody did to show, like the telescope experiment. It's more a theory that was created to explain away another experiment.
Okay, I'm going to read a little bit about his experiment. Right, there you go, science. All right, this is a little history about Airy's experiment. Many think it was proven long ago that the world orbits the sun. However, the results of two simple experiments, both performed in the 19th century, showed that it is the stars which move, not the world. An experiment with a water-filled telescope was performed by the then Astronomer Royal George Airy in 1871. So that's when he did the experiment, which can be considered to be a variation of an earlier experiment done by Francois Arago, where he moved a slab of glass like the telescope thing in 1810. So that's it. 1871, he did it. And when did the theory of relativity come out?
It was an. I sent you another link called the Relativity Fraud. You can watch that at some point, but we'll include it in the notes.
All right.
So that people who are listening can go check it out.
1905. Look at that. There it says in 1905, Albert Einstein determined that the law of physics are the same. Of course, he could have worked on it earlier, I would say. Wouldn't you?
Well, it says, well, when was Airy's failure? When did he do the telescope experiment?
Yeah, 1871.
Okay. So there was Bradley's aberration hypothesis, which was before that. You know, these were really early experiments.
Albert Einstein was... Yeah. Einstein was born in 1879, by the way. He wasn't even born yet when Airy did this experiment.
Mm-hmm. There's,
he died in 55.
Sometimes people call it the matrix reality because it creates a fictitious world. In other words, that the theory of relativity is not something that you can observe in nature for yourself. So a lot of people are saying that the theory of relativity is just fraud.
You mean E equals MC squared? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, so thermodynamics. Albert Einstein's first paper submitted in 1900. Well, we're not too far away. You know, once they figured out they had to prove Airy wrong, they had to get their stuff together, try and find someone to who understood what Aries was saying. So Albert Einstein's first paper was in 1900. 1900.
So they're saying that basically the theory of relativity was falsifying observational evidence. In other words, you know, like I said before, the theory was just created in order to falsify this other observational experiment, but never actually showed an experiment on its own, like the telescope kind of thing.
Right. Is there an experiment that proves the theory of relativity?
No.
So it can't be shown in any way, or can it?
No. I mean, you know, you might have some scientists that say they can prove it with some whatever, you know, particle experiments where they use these high-tech machines and are doing particle physics or whatever, but it's not something that we can... If you and I bought a telescope, we could do that experiment if we understood it.
Right. So let's go over what E equals MC squared is. So E stands for energy, right?
I think so.
And?
Yeah.
M stands for mass.
Energy equals mass multiplied by the speed of light squared.
Okay.
Energy is equal to mass multiplied by the speed of light squared.
Yeah.
That's what it means.
So if we, let's see. If we want to get mass alone, that means energy divided by the speed of light squared equals how much you weigh.
But even then, could you... What is the speed of light?
It's yeah, they say they have a constant. Yeah. Speed of light. Let's find it. It's not a link in the in this wiki article. Come on. Where's their link to speed? There you go. I knew they would have the link. It's always in different units, but 299,792,458 meters per second. I think we can say 3 million meters per second. Right. Is that the constant, though?
I don't know.
I thought the constant was some other gravitational weird thing. Let's see.
This is interesting here. In 1818, Fresnel, a French engineer, used experiments with polarized light to infer that light is a shear wave in a solid elastic medium. In 1873, Maxwell, a Scottish physicist, used electromagnetic theory to infer that his medium encompasses the universe, and because of its high rigidity, can phase the shear waves at 300,000 kilometers per second. And then in 1989, there was Fitzgerald, 1897, Larmor, 1900, Poincare, French mathematician.
Wow.
After Darwin,
and what are
most
they all
physicists,
showing?
Says in 1905, the scene was set for a scientific fraudster named Albert Einstein, who had scraped through his physics course by the barest margin and was unemployable as an academic. But he wrote on the electrodynamics of moving bodies with a view to solving the crisis the physicists found themselves in. Test has confirmed 19th century theory is correct, but...
Yeah, that's highly unlikely. Someone would be poor in school like that. Don't you think that'd be unlikely to be such a poor student and then go to fame in college? You know, I mean, in those upper courses.
Sure. I think he was just a, you know, just a character.
Well, who was doing the real thing?
Yeah, so does Tycho.
Someone, you think it was a team?
Tycho.
Oh, go ahead.
Tycho Brahe was a Dutch astronomer who devised a model mathematically equivalent to the Copernican model in which the planets revolve around the sun, but in his model, the sun revolved around the Earth. You know, you had all these guys explaining away the previous models. And they wrote all these books about Copernicus, and they were really pumping, like, the Copernicus-Newton models. And they, you know, they would say, they would come up with these cosmological principles. But you couldn't apply those things to everyday observations. You know, so Tycho Brahe would say, or Aristotle, or any of them would say, this is what we're observing. This is what the sun looks like it's doing. This is what the moon looks like it's doing. This is what the earth looks like it's doing. And then they would come up with this principle to explain those things away. Like another one of those things is space-time. You know, the principle or the concept of space-time, where time is no longer the same as we measure it in our everyday lives, just local time and distance. Now it's space-time. And so they can say, oh, there's this magical thing called space-time.
Yeah. I feel smart when I say it, space-time. And then sometimes I add the word continuum. And that really blows people away. Space time.
I mean, I think even the... Even Newton's theory of gravity was, you know, the theory of gravity is another example.
Yeah, that confuses me.
Newton proposed the theory of gravity. He proposed this theory of universal gravity in the 1600s. He described gravity as a force of attraction between all masses. This allowed for the correct prediction of the motions of the planets, the discovery of Neptune, the basic relation between a star's mass and its temperature, and on and on and on. Newtonian gravity was and is a robust scientific theory. But again, he created that theory of gravity in order to explain away... in order to explain how all these things were possible in the Copernican model.
Wow. Some of those early models, though, they were real good at explaining how the positions worked out of these planets and stuff. You know, and other things. They were pretty good.
But it's reverse engineering. It's not... It's like... you know, coming up with the model first and then filling in all the blanks to explain how it works versus making observations and then reaching the conclusion that this is what the model must look like based on all the variables.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
You know, if you have a theory and then another scientist comes along with a different theory, like his theory must be able to do more than the old one.
Well, I don't, going through school, Sammy, and reading all these different theories on Earth models, because, you know, I'm a math major, so this is like... we love talking about Newton and, you know, all the other Galileo, and they come up constantly, so there's always math there. So I'm pretty familiar with the tales, and, you know, it seems logical as we progress through time and we get new theories that replace old ones. They encompass more facts and become more detailed, and they seem to work, seems to make sense. So...
well, sure.
That's why I never questioned if the Earth was a globe or not, because it all kind of makes sense.
Sure, but I feel the same way. But now I'm wondering. Well, it just makes sense. It doesn't make sense to me. I was a math major too. It doesn't make sense to me. It only made sense to me because I thought, well, it must make sense to people who were smarter than me. Like, you know, quantum field theory and this conceptual, you can see...
oh, that doesn't make sense. No. That. I'm not getting that at all.
No, and most people...
let's talk about that for a minute.
Well...
this whole quantum thing, right? Didn't they prove it with that experiment where they have... they said if you record something, it changes it. You know, by observing it, you change it. So they did this experiment where they said they observed something happen, and then they took a picture of this same thing happening, but every time they took a picture, it wasn't what they observed. It was of something else. So they said taking a picture of it changed it. Well, I'm like, if that's true, then shouldn't we all be able to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Experiment?
Yeah, the particle physics Like, you heard of, like, the Higgs boson, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's the tiniest to be the God piece particle. Of the...
Right, what everything else is made of.
Right. Now, do we believe in this thing? Or is it just another hoax?
Well, if there's atoms, what's an atom made of? That's funny. They never called an atom. Well, I guess it's Adam. There you go. It is the God bonds. An offspring of God. That's funny.
Or there was, you know, there's another one where they say that scientists have been able to get a particle to disappear for a fraction of a second.
Do you trust those experiments?
No.
I mean, what are they saying? It's going into another dimension? They got an invisibility cloak or a, you know, some sort of thing? How did they explain that it disappeared?
I don't remember. But you're familiar with the Large Hadron Collider, right?
Yes.
They say that this machine or whatever discovered a particle which is, you know, this Higgs boson God particle.
So they mash some atoms together and then they picked up all the broken pieces and they're like, look, a Higgs boson particle.
And you know,
that basically
theoretically
it.
Maybe it makes sense. It makes sense theoretically. But they're saying it's a particle and a field. So it's like, you know, it's particle and space at the same time. In other words,
what it's made of?
This object can be both a mass, like a thing of matter, and at the same time it exists as the space that occupies it. So, like, basically they're saying that they can now define space as matter, not just this invisible thing.
Well, that means space then would be like ether or something. Or am I too provincial?
I don't know.
It can be nothing?
I mean, even... I think CERN is a hoax. So
well, they're
all
doing
these, like,
something
proton,
down there.
They're doing something, sure, but have they discovered this whole new way that protons and electrons are working and occupying space? And because then you're going back to even just the basics of what is space and space-time. It just goes back to the... I think even these physicists who are doing these particle experiments, I think that's just an additional fraud or hoax to prop up the NASA stuff. It's all hand in hand. Particle physicist isn't going to discover something that disproves what NASA's saying. They're all helping each other along the way, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Wow. It's complicated, Sammy.
Yeah, and they want it to be. They rely on our own ignorance to say, oh, well, I'm just not smart enough to understand that. And by the way,
a lot to memorize.
By the way, that whole God particle thing, they was first thought up in the 60s, but they just now detected it. In other words, they've been trying to find it since it was hypothesized in the 1960s, and they just
happened to be
correct.
I thought they didn't actually find it.
Well, they claim to have.
I thought there was a claim recently, and then they couldn't prove it, and it was debunked, and they had made a mistake.
Maybe you're right. But the beginning, they said that it was the first definitive observation of physics beyond the standard model.
Aww.
But no, I think you're right. I think it was like, oh, wait, false alarm, not yet.
Well, now here's one. July 2013, how Higgs boson was found. I'm going to have to check everybody. Well, they didn't. Yeah, 2013, let me try. I'll go to Wikipedia, it'll be current. Despite being present everywhere, the existence of the Higgs field is very hard to confirm. It can be detected through its excitations, but these are extremely hard to produce and detect. Important fundamental question has led to a 40-year search. Yeah, you're right, a long time. This is more than 40 though, right? 60. Ah, it's 50. The construction of the world's largest, most expensive complex experiment facilities able to create Higgs bosons. Oh, they said July 2012. I'm confused.
Yeah, it was recent. Yeah, it was recent.
Oh, it said it's a boson, but is it Higgs?
You're right.
Not everybody agrees. Yeah. It's being looked at. But anyway, they said they found it, huh? How could they know that that's what it is, that it can fill its own space or it can be anything it wants?
Mm-hmm. You know, I need to go to bed.
Yeah, me too. This is crazy.
Well,
wow, that's all the Big Bang Theory talks about, by the way. Higgs boson particles.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
It.
Yeah, they gotta have that geeky science physicist stuff, you know, somehow pushed to the mainstream.
Yes. Well, it's nice to talk with you, Sammy.
Yeah, likewise.
I enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, so will you just collect the, all those links?
Yeah, I'll do that. When Ab posts this, I'll throw them in the thing there.
Yeah, sounds good, because we've got a bunch of them on here.
Yeah.
Well, happy PSYOP anniversary.
Yes, hi, happy PSYOP. This is a big day for PSYOP people, or yesterday was, because now it's 2:22.
Mm-hmm. 3:22 if you're in Colorado.
Oh, no. Even worse. Wow.
All right, we'll take care. We'll chat soon.
Right,
oh, you know, one
care.
More thing I was thinking before I let you go. We gotta tell Ab that he's gotta change the bumper on his, you know, when the show starts and he has the little bumper that says, "Welcome to Fakeologist."
Yeah.
Well, there's that one part where he says, he says, this audio chat is an easy way for fakeologists to communicate around the globe. Or something like that.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, he's gonna have to change that. We don't know. We don't know anymore. We don't know if it's a globe.
Can we say around the earth?
But should we even use the word around?
Around. That's funny. All over the earth.
There you go.
All over the earth.
Yeah.
Like you're pouring syrup on top of something.
Yeah, big pancake.
That's funny. Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah.
He doesn't even know it.
I know, I listened to it a couple times and I just kind of laughed every time it came up. But on that note, have a good night.
That is funny. All right, have a great night, Sammy.
All right, chat you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay, no, bye.
Hi, I'm Pablo Novi of 911truthdialogue.com, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio on fakeologist.com.